Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Disgusting slop.
You're a goddamn disgrace!
A vicious mother, isn't he?
Yeah. He can't do that to our pledges.
Only we can do that to our pledges.
Redo those buttons! Dress that belt buckle, straighten that cap, and goddamn it, tuck up those pajamas! Attention! Eyes front! What's that on your chest, mister?
It's a pledge pin, sir.
A pledge pin on your uniform!
Puck did.
Just tell me, mister, what fraternity would pledge a man like you?
It's a Delta pin, sir.
Slice.
You will report to the stable tonight and every night at 1900 hours. And without that pledge pin! Do you understand?
Your left arm is straight. But you're not keeping your head down.
You're all worthless and weak. Now drop and give me 20.
Whoa! Get back and race! The 10 curve!
Always try to hit through the ball.
Whoa! Big fella! Whoa! Whoa!
I gotta work on my game.
No. Don't think of it as work. The whole point is just to enjoy yourself.
Hello, it is 25 minutes after the hour of one, and this is the month of February in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milkpacking district, here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, the home of all good things and occasionally poo in my driveway. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964, if you would like to join us today. And weigh in with your thoughts, observations, provocations, musings, ruminations, recipes, whatever it is that you might have. Whatever it is that's plaguing your brain that yearns to be set free, set adrift on the memory bliss of the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-505-6964. Do you ever just think of a random celebrity and then wonder where they are at this very moment? Like, not in general, not what are they doing with their life overall, but what are they doing, like, right now?
Yeah,
like,
I do.
Where is Daniel Stern today?
Strangely, yes, I do. I do have those thoughts.
Who's the last celebrity you wondered about?
God, I'm trying to think. There was one just the other day, and I'm trying to remember who it was.
I guess by definition, you're not going to keep that kind of thing in your memory very long.
Well, yeah, I can't remember her name. I think it was the oldest daughter on Charles in Charge.
Oh no, she's. I know all about that chick. First of all, yes, she did get nude at one point. Also, I think she became a doctor.
Did she?
No, she didn't. Of course not. Look at her. What are you, high?
She might have.
Yeah,
That girl from...
And a good driver.
Yeah.
That girl from The Wonder Years is like a mathematician.
Okay, look, I love Danica McKellar. But I want you to look at Danica McKellar, and I want you to look at that chick from Charles in Charge side by side in a lineup. We know that one of those girls is good at math and one ain't. And that's just the way, that's the way the cookie crumbles, sister. That's the way that the universe distributes favors. I think she ended up being on, Melrose for a while. The eldest daughter on Charles in Charge. Not the brainy one. And, you know, and I feel like I'm failing my generation. I can't come up with, can't remember either of their names. No. I want to say the younger daughter's name was Jo, but only because she was kind of tomboyish. That's not her name. Because at one point, I guess, depressingly or inevitably or embarrassingly or just, you know, what are you going to do? I was like, I was Googling the daughters from Charles in Charge like a year ago.
Oh, God.
I think that's what I did for the first month after I got fired by KUFO. I just sat home and Googled, like, you know, famous chicks who used to be on TV just to see what they were up to. See if they might hump an unemployed guy. The answer, by the way, is no. I think she ended up being on a season or two of Melrose. And then, I don't know, did something or other. And then released an album, probably, of some kind. Did an off-Broadway production. Nah. I'm just guessing. I'm spitballing now. I don't even really know.
But I do have that thing, though, where I think about people like that, and I think, where do they live now?
Yeah.
Does she still have any of her money left? Is she living, like, a crappy apartment in Canoga Park?
Probably, with Mark Price.
Yeah.
Like, I was just thinking about the guys in PM Dawn. Really, wait, like, where's Prince B from and the other guy from PM Dawn? What are they doing right now? Just sitting around, fearing every knock at the door, afraid that KRS-One is coming to beat them down again?
I met Mark Price at a party once. He was a very nice guy.
I thought you said he was a dick. Oh, no, that was somebody else.
That was somebody else.
That was somebody else that we won't mention right. My name because we don't want it to cause any awkwardness.
No.
That's right. Yeah, you said Mark Price was a good guy. Yeah. Well, now I have to, like, now I have to look up the Charles in Charge daughters, which I'll do here in just a few. Because there was Scott Baio, Willie Ames, the two daughters, and then there was the dad. And was the dad on Charles in Charge not what's-his-name? It was Hoover from Animal House.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Is it Hoover? Have I got that right? Who's the? Oh, Utter, please don't do this.
Yeah, that was Hoover.
That guy. Yeah, he was the dad on Charles in Charge.
Oh.
And then also, strangely enough,
I didn't pay a lot of attention to Charles in Charge, I have to say.
I watched a lot of Charles in Charge. I really did. And the thing about it is like I watched a lot of that. I watched a lot of Mama's Family, a lot of Small Wonder. Don't remember much about.
Oh, God.
I don't remember much about any of those shows. Like, I watched them, but it's like, you know what those shows are? It's like watching Ready Whip. Where, you know, it goes into your mouth, gone.
I mean, I know at some point I saw every single episode of Family Ties and, like, Facts of Life. But, yeah, no, I remember basically the dynamic and the characters overall, and that's it. I don't remember any specific plots.
Now, see, you shouldn't compare your Family Ties to your Charles in Charge or your Facts of Life to your Small Wonder. Two totally different kinds of shows. First of all, Dawn. Facts of Life, that's a network television program with the promotional and production budget behind it that a network program comes with. The other shows are all syndicated. So like Charles in Charge, Small Wonder, Mama's Family actually network show for the first 2 years, then syndicated afterward.
Yeah.
And that's why they looked like crap, by the way. And that's why they were written so badly. Because it's like, what are you going to be able to get with syndication dollars? Because syndication on TV is not like syndication like in radio, where like you're in one city and then you're in 70 cities and you get paid a lot more. Syndication on television is when you can't find a network who will carry your crap. And so you just end up peddling it yourself out of the back of a car like Roger Corman, you know? Or like Eazy-E at a Compton swap meet. Just going, I got your 7-inch. You want a 7-inch? 12-inch? How about I shoot you? You know, or whatever.
I got a show about a zany family.
You know who knows?
Do you want to watch this?
You know who knows?
The little girl's a robot.
Everything about Small Wonder is our good friend Todd the Corpse Workoven. That guy knows more about Small Wonder than 10 men.
So now where is she? What happened to her?
I don't know. Okay, we ought to start like an adjunct to Pop Culture Authority called What the Hell Ever Happened to That One Guy?
And was she a good actress or a terrible actress?
Well, all she really had to do was do the stereotypical robot voice.
I know, but that's the thing is that, you know...
That's not acting, that's just speaking.
And she was a kid, too.
Yeah.
So I wonder, it's like, did she never become an actress because she never learned anything beyond that? It just completely it like retarded her acting skills.
That's the only thing she could do. She was typecast.
She was completely unable to actually emote on camera after that.
Typecast is a 50s style robot in a dress. I don't know. Okay, for tomorrow, I'll figure that out. Here's for tomorrow, we'll do sort of a different pop culture authority. It's going to be a catch-all of what the hell ever happened to.
Okay.
Which I know that's a thing at like VH1 or whatever. They, you know, everybody, you know, does that sort of stuff. But it's like they're always doing people that I don't really care about. And also that, like, you probably already know, or that they're like, well, they'll do, like, you know, whatever happened to the Facts of Life girls. And it's like you already know what happened to the Facts of Life girls because they're all either on other shows or they're hawking like diet crap or God books somewhere. Like, they didn't really ever go away or vanish. Vicky from Small Wonder vanished, to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, I have no idea. I don't even know her name, so I don't know.
I'll look into that tomorrow. Also, those two chicks from Charles in Charge. I'll look at them. Mom was hot on that show, too. Here's another one. I'm going to throw this one as a bonus so you ladies don't feel left out. So I'll do the Charles in Charge girls, so to speak. Also, the chick from Small Wonder. And then, just because I wish to play on both sides of the field here, and then I'll do Ernie. From my three sons.
Ooh, nice.
And I will resist the urge to go, damn it, Ernie! Uncle Charlie, what ever happened to me? Where did I go? All right, it's 503-505. That's not even a good impression, but it's one of the only ones I can do.
No, that was
bad. Hey, Uncle Charlie, I seem to have vanished altogether.
He was my favorite, by the way.
He's everybody's favorite.
Everybody loves Ernie.
Ernie rules. Do you remember the whole thing with Chip and Ernie?
They're actually cousins. Are they?
No,
Ernie,
fail.
Wasn't Ernie adopted?
Yes. But yeah. I don't think they're cousins.
I thought he was actually related to them in some fashion.
I'm actually saying
and
fail.
And then was adopted because somebody died or something.
I'm saying fail, but I could be making that. They might be cousins. But I know that he was adopted.
Right.
And I remember that they sealed the adoption. So they leave the courthouse. And Ernie says to Chip, Ernie says, hey, guess what? I'm your brother. And Chip says, that's great. Do you want to get a soda? And then they walk off, and then the credits roll.
Oh,
and that's
nice.
How the adoption episode of My Three Sons ends. I don't know why I've remembered. And here's the thing. I haven't seen that for like 30 years. That's just stuck in my head for some reason. Just there, just looping around like one of those ionic laundry balls or something. Anyway, if you want to email, you can do that as well. That's the sort of thing that might amuse you. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick@RickEmerson.com. Dawn Taylor can be emailed as well. It's Dawn, D-A-W-N, Dawn, D-A-W-N, @RickEmerson.com. Text box open on the website also if you want to text us via Skype, because everybody's into the Skype these days. You can do that at, that is a Rick Emerson Show via Skype. That is our username. It's a Rick Emerson Show via Skype. A couple bits of business. First of all, today's show brought to you by EH Vending. Coming up next hour, we'll have clue number two. For this week's Name That Snack Contest. That is clue number two. This week's Name That Snack Contest. I saw Big Jim Willig this morning, and he was greatly amused and a little flattered to learn that last week a lot of people guessed Big Hunk because we said that it has something in similar, you know, in common, something similar with today's guest. So he was very, he was flattered by that. But I shouldn't tell the story on the air, but he said he was flattered by that. But that was as he was, his phrase now, as he was trying to lance a big goiter. It was
oh God!
On the side,
oh God! Yeah,
but it wasn't really a goiter, and he wasn't lancing it. He was at, you won't see this till this coming Sunday. But Jim Willig was on Outlook. We taped an episode of Outlook Portland this morning. Him and a guy named Don Frost. And you know how I feel about comedians most of the time.
Yeah.
Which is what makes it so. That is what makes Jim such an exception, and what makes that his segment, which is Humor Me Comedy 101, which will be coming up this Friday, where the focus is Mel Brooks, by the way, talking about comedy and comics, because it's like then I can just get the cream. Then it's like he's pre-screened it all for me, and I don't have to deal with a bunch of, like, hacks, you know, and just people that are, you know, because there's really no middle of the road with comedy. Nobody's kind of amusing. Comedians are always, you know, they're really funny or they're terrible, and the terrible ones always think they're hilarious, and they're just douchebags on top of it. So today, though, we taped an episode of Outlook Portland, and it's about what it's like to be a comedian, specifically in Portland, and it was Jim and this guy named Don Frost, who was hilarious. But Jim, and of course, they just look like comedians, by which I mean they look like they just got out of bed. And bed was in a bar. And the bar was in a barge filled with sewage somewhere. And also, like, he's going to work at a porn store later today. So, you know.
So they dressed up for the big show, is what you're saying.
They really did. And then we're getting ready to go in. And, I'm in the... You know, I'm in the mirror, just being a woman, just ladling on makeup, just putting on makeup just by the metric ton, by the metric carload, one might say, just piling it on. And then you know, Jim comes in, and he's wearing a Friday the 13th T-shirt with a huge hatchet covered in blood on the front. And first time I think I've ever seen him without a hat, by the way, because he's like, he does this thing of, his delivery is so great, I think, he's like in the dressing room, and he's combing his hair, and he goes, well, this comb wasn't making me any less bald. And then he just keeps going with it, though, for like another 5 minutes. But he had a... you know, a small blemish, a small pimply blemish, you know, just a small zit on the neck. Nothing, you know, nothing you're really going to... But it's like, but he just, it's that thing where you see one small flaw or imperfection and you just fixate on it, especially if you're going to be on TV.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, it doesn't help that he's there with his friend, a comedian, who's saying, like, well, can we just have, like, I don't know, like a plant or something to put in front of you or just maybe I could just lean over to the left the entire time because you're going to sicken people otherwise. So it was just, but it was really a fantastic show. It was, as much as I say this every week, you got to catch this week's Outlook Portland coming up this Sunday. It really is. Because, you know, here's the other thing about Jim is that he's a funny guy, but he's not like coming in and just doing shtick. And that was the thing about his friend, this guy, Don Frost, who I had not met before. It's like comedians, it's like if you're a truly funny person, if you are a talented comedian, that means you yourself are legitimately funny. Yeah. And you're just not coming on stage going, I just flew in, boy, my arm's tired, wah, wah. And you're just reciting some crap. Because then you're just a guy reading bumper stickers, basically. But if you're a funny person, then I want to interview you out of character, you know, just because then it's like anything is funny filtered through a guy like that. Anyway, so they were really, really great. One of the very, very few times on Outlook Portland when I almost lost my composure, I think a couple of times. Because it's like every time we go to break, it would just be, you know, nothing but goiters. Anyway, all right, let's see. A couple of other things. So we got that, ehvending.com. I'll do clue number two coming up later on today. Also, our interview with Joelle Carter of Justified. She plays Ava Crowder on Justified, which returns tomorrow. That is Wednesday on FX. That's going to be happening Thursday, actually, not today. It's a little misspeak on my part. It's actually not today, Tuesday. It is coming up the day after tomorrow. So this Thursday, which is the 10th, we'll be talking to Joelle Carter of Justified. Let's see what else. Coming up today, Geek Watch, Penis Watch, Democracy on the March. Clue number two in the EH Vending Contest, I mentioned that. Maybe the top five, maybe not. We'll do a recap of last night's House. So House returned after a week sabbatical. So we'll do a recap of last night's episode of House. By the way, featuring my television girlfriend, Paula Marshall, who does not know that she has a little crush on me, but it's true.
Yeah, I saw her, last night.
I love her.
On the House.
You know, I just wish that maybe she's in something regularly, maybe she's not, but I wish she was. Because it's like, I'm a huge... And I'm not a guy who's like always just like gaga over actresses because it's like, you know, that's a full-time job. If
she
you're
was
gonna
in
have...
a, I think she was in a terrible sitcom like last
Probably.
Year. And I remember really rooting for her because I really like her so much and wanting it to. And it was just, it was, her whole role was basically to just, it was her and her wacky roommates and their zany friends. And they, of course, lived like two blocks from the beach. So that everybody was walking around in, like, you know...
When was this?
Shorts and hot, you know... And, this was this last year, I thought. Let me see. It could have... As far as I know, I have no sense of time, so it could be, like, 2 years ago or something.
Well, all right, then.
But I know, yeah, a lot of tank tops and shorts, and the weather never seemed to get
cool. Of course.
Cool,
I'm just a huge fan of hers, and I don't think we've seen her in a house before, but she was playing Cuddy's sister. And it's like, who knew that she had sisters? So, Well, in any event, so we'll do a recap of House, last night's episode of House, a little bit later on. Plus, Don Taylor's tracking the following stories for you on this Tuesday.
The Kelso School District takes a stand on sexting. A rooster kills a guy in a cockfight. And Dr. Conrad Murray is back in the
Woo!
Saddle.
That's a Jackson watch, you know.
It is. I actually put MJ at the top of that. The thing is, we have so many great watches to do today, and I always say, I've got these news stories, and then we do the watches, and then we end up, like, there's one or two stories we end up not doing, so
well, I'm trying. Started, I think I mentioned the other day I've been pulling less sound, because it's like I was pulling, like, 75 pages worth, and we never get to any of it, because there's just too much gold to be gotten to, Don.
Before we get to whatever you're about to say, is there any water in your water bottle?
There is.
Could I have some of it on this napkin so
yes.
I can try and wash the spider eggs out of my eye or whatever it is that's going on?
They're not really spider eggs, kids, except that they are. So do you have like an eyelash or something in your eye?
It could be. It could be flaked mascara. It could be something. But it's a thing where, you know, it's something so tiny.
Yeah.
You probably can't see it, but it feels like I've got like a tree bark, you know, just like a hunk of tree bark in my eye or something. So.
It is a splinter which feels like a beam in your own
yeah.
eye. Yes. A moat. Yeah, your eye's not red for what it's worth, so your eye doesn't think there's anything in there.
Oh, but I know it's there. I can feel it. And I just keep blinking, and it's distracting.
Would you like me to tape down one of your eyes like you had a lazy, like you're one of those kids with lazy eye, and you get like the half, like you get the bowl of a spoon taped to your eye or something when you're in third grade?
Of course, now I'll have like the one big raccoon eye with the mascara after I.
No, it looks fine.
But hey, what the hell?
Yeah. You know, the thing about your eye, but you want to talk about the place in your body where there's just a disproportionate response to pain. That's a thing where it's like you just get the one eyelash or something in there. Yeah. Eyes really are just, that is the weak spot in the human body. That's more of an Achilles heel than your actual Achilles heel when you think about it, because it's like you just get like a grain of sand or something in there and you are effed.
Yes.
You are effed until you just go to one of those eye wash stations somewhere, you know, and just get those, you know.
Oh, if only we had an eye wash station
flushed out.
Right now. Okay. I will be sitting here dabbing at my eye.
We could just waterboard you. Maybe we could just lean you back into the sink. Do you have eye drops?
No.
Oh, neither do I.
Okay. I don't usually have, anyway.
Are you just sticking a paper, towel into your eye? Because that's going to put more things into your eye, not fewer.
I think I'm going to be better now.
Aren't little bits of paper going to come off in your eye then?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Are the spiders afraid of paper?
They are.
Okay.
They're afeared. They think it's a ghost.
All right. You know, maybe you've got a sty of some kind.
No, I know. Styes usually, don't they usually have, they happen on the outside. This is a little something floating around under my eyelid.
You don't wear contacts, do you?
No.
Okay, because occasionally, you know what happens to me every once in a while? I don't wear contacts all that often. Contact, it'll like, you put them on your eye, and then it's like, sometimes it'll flop over, it'll fold over on itself like a quesadilla.
Huh.
You fold that tortilla in half.
Like a little eye omelet.
Like a calzone, like an eye omelet, yes. And then it'll go, and it'll just fall into the back of your eye.
Oh, God. That's what,
And then you're just like, crap. You know, and it's not a change purse. You can't store a lot of stuff back there.
I'm so weird and sensitive about my eyes that I've never been able to even imagine wearing, like, contacts. It's hard for me to imagine.
And here's the thing is, like, everybody, because Sarah and I have talked about this before, because she's supposed to wear glasses and she doesn't for, you know, whatever reason. And I keep saying, like, you got to get contacts. And she's like, oh, I couldn't. And I was this way. Everybody thinks that they are going to have a hard time sticking the contact in your eye. Like, everybody thinks, like, I could never stick a thing in your eye, which is exactly what I said. And everybody believes that's to be the case.
I just stuck a napkin in my eye.
I was going to say. And the thing about putting the contact in, that actually, if it's done correctly, you almost don't feel it. I mean, you can tell, but it really is just like putting in an eye drop because it's very wet and pliable. So you almost don't feel that any more than you would feel like if your eye teared up a little bit. It would just be like extra liquid. But I got to tell you, when your contact like gets lost and it like starts floating around your eye, you feel that. Or like if you get like an eyelash underneath your contact lens, you feel that. You feel like somebody's just taken a belt sander to your face. So that's no good. All right. Well, anyway.
So that happened.
All right, that happened. But you know what else happened, Don? I auditioned for an exciting an exciting commercial role. I'm seeing if I have the script or sides for the audition yesterday. By the way, just FYI, in case this should come up in the future, like if they should need my services, that's like if this role in the commercial doesn't make me independently wealthy. If I should have to audition again, there we go. The new auditioning place is only like, it's like, literally it took me like 2.5 minutes to get in. I mean, it is like a straight shot from, it's almost like they moved just for my convenience after my star-making turn in Leverage. I got in the car, I drove, and I mean, it was like, I think, fewer than 3 minutes, and I was just, and I was there. So that's good news. So I went, what did I say about the audition yesterday in advance? I forget what I even said it was.
I don't know. We thought it was for a mattress place because you were going to be guy standing by mattress.
So through nobody's fault. It was just one of those things where it's like the time had been moved around because it's like, you know, because it's like the thing you do. You have an agent. It's like the company calls the agent. And they say, hey, we're looking for this kind of a guy. And the agent says, I know just the guy. Hold on. And then, you know, the agent calls me or sends me an email and he's like, kid, I got your big breakthrough. You know, your next huge part is here. And I say, what is it, Maury? And he says, well, it's for a mattress company, kid. And I say, all right, Maury, whatever you say. You're the boss, Maury. And so, you know, and it's like, and I've said, like, you know, you can't, like, between 11 and 3, like, didn't work for me because I got, you know, Legion of News in this show. And it's like, you know, that's kind of the priority. The people come first, of course. You know, but occasionally they just like the assistant will be there, or it's like, or like, you know, some other guy in the office will not, you know, won't know the deal, and so they'll schedule me. So I got scheduled for like 1:30. I'm like, well, I can't do that. So I go back. I'm like, Maury, no can do. And he's like, no, we'll move things around. Don't worry about it. And so they moved it to like to 3:30. So I get there like 3:25 or whatever, like, you know, a couple minutes to spare, and it never goes on time anyway. But it turned out that was somehow not communicated because they've just moved to a new office. And the casting place is going, wait for it, paperless.
Mm.
And paperless means, like, they don't have the paper on which they wrote down, like, the actual time. You know, again, nobody's fault. But it's transitioning from a papered office to an electronic office. Things slip through the cracks. So, anyway, so I get there, and it's like, I'm just, you know, and here's the thing. It's not like I'm not complaining. I'm really not. But here's the, you know, I mean, you've done some of this. You know, the very worst thing about going to an audition, the worst thing in the world. Not the rejection, because I'm used to that at this point in my life in every way.
It's not really. I don't know what. Right?
It's being around actors.
Oh, well, yeah.
That is just the worst. It is just, I don't know. It's like being at the zoo on like poo flinging day. I mean, it's just the worst, you know. And it's not like I don't have friends who are actors. I do, but you know what? I have friends who are actors, like I have friends who are comedians. Not representative of the whole. That is a non-representative sample. They are blowing the curve. They are not. They are. It's a skewed demonstration of that slice of the American demographic. So I'm sitting there. And it's like, and I'm doing my best just to not pay attention to anybody, because you know how it is. You've probably auditioned for roles where you go there, and it's like, not a cattle call as such, but I mean, it's like, you know, but there's a lot of people auditioning for whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because it's like every actor, and I'm not mocking this, because radio people are the same way. Let me ask you this right now. Do you need to stop and go to the ladies' room?
No, I'm good. I'm sitting here winking like I have some kind of a nervous tick.
Same, but more is that water working out for you there?
The water is working out for me.
All right.
Hold on.
And I don't mean that in a snarky way. You can use as much of that. It's just regular water, I think.
Oh, wait, thank you.
And I think that's the kind of can that, or the bottle that doesn't give you cancer, but I don't know. Honestly, who's to say?
You tell some kind of amusing anecdote for the next 5 seconds.
So then I said, the room is paid for. We might as well do it. She said, but that's the donkey.
Okay.
All right.
Now my face is all wet.
Yeah, no, but your eye is not red, though. So, I mean, it seems like whatever it is not causing much of a... It's not like it's not like you got some sort of a cyst or something forming in your eye.
No, thank you.
Don't worry about that.
Thank you.
I'm just trying to help.
Let me know if it looks like...
If there's a large growth, I'll tell you. I'll be sure to... I'll clue you in. But, you know, but Greg, you know, it tells these stories to where it's like you're sitting there and it's like several people, you know, and again, radio people are the same way. So I'm not trying to make fun of actors. I'm not trying to mock anybody's ambition or anybody's desire to get eggs. Everybody's going to start somewhere. And you know what? Even if you've, and especially with acting, I think, even if you've had some successful roles or you've gotten a few good gigs, it's like every time you're basically starting at the bottom again until you become successful, until you become famous or accomplished to some significant degree. You are always starting at the bottom again. So it's like, you know, you could be some big, you know, some hotshot DJ, you know, in some city. But you get fired, you move to some other town, unless you're like Cousin Brucey or something. It's like you're starting at the bottom again. Unless you're Howard Stern, you are starting at, you know, like being the nighttime guy in Tulsa once again. So it's like you're sitting there and it's like everybody's turning out for the role because everybody's like fighting over every crumb of acting job available. And so you're just, you know, and I'm trying to block it all out because people are sitting there like rehearsing lines to themselves and just like primping in small hand mirrors. This is the men, of course, doing this as well. I do all that in the car, by the way. I apply my summer bisque in the car before I go in because Rick Emerson doesn't primp in front of people. No, sir. That would be shameful. So I'm sitting there and it's like I'm typing. I'm doing my Outlook Portland notes, just trying to block out. And I don't wear like earbuds or the iPod or whatever the hell, because it's like I don't want them to be like having to, you know, come bonk me on the head to get my attention. And some people will do that. They'll sit there and I think what they're doing is they're listening to themselves rehearsing the lines, especially if it's like in an accent of some kind.
Okay.
And it's like they'll just rehearse the lines and then they'll, you know, and then they'll like, you know, or they'll get
some. That's interesting.
I know somebody who actually, if he has to get if he's auditioning for something with an accent, he'll find somebody who has that accent or can do it. He'll have them record the sides, the script, and then he'll just imitate them for the audition. And he figures if he gets the gig, he'll fake the rest of it later. All he needs to do is imitate them saying those words. So they're, you know, they're doing whatever. But I'm just typing on the computer, and I'm just hearing these conversations going on. I swear to God, I actually made it. I made notes. I wrote down a couple of these things. Sitting in the waiting room for the audition yesterday. So there's a woman, and it's like, and here's the other thing I didn't tell you. So again, because I showed up a little later in the day than the auditioners were expecting. They were expecting me earlier. I showed up a little later. So it is, in fact, this commercial for like a bedding company or whatever. It's like bed products. And so I'm playing dad, but what, of course, I should have realized there is when you're playing dad or like guy from left who is dad, that also means that there's like a mom and a kid. So it's like you're sitting there and it's like I look around and it's not just guys. It's guys and ladies and children.
Mm.
Child actors. Adorable, all of them, and they're wonderful parents.
Oh, boy.
There's nothing that's more adorable than the parent of a child who's trying to act. Or a child, you know, or a parent who is trying to act via their child. And so that is just, that's a little slice of heaven right there. A bunch of child actors.
Oh, wow.
And it's not even the kids' actors' fault. Like, it's like, you know, and I'm not saying the kids were bad. There's nothing bad about the kids, you know, that were there yesterday. It wasn't like they were obnoxious. There were no, like, stage mothers, you know, as such. And the kids weren't ill-behaved in some way. But you just brace yourself, you know. You go to audition, it's like there's children, and you're like, oh, God. Because you just fear the worst. Anyway, so there's a woman sitting there, and I couldn't figure out if she was there with her kid or if she was there by herself. Come to find out, whole acting family. So they got like a whole troupe where it's like mom, dad, son, all auditioning, not together for whatever reason. Or she's like the legal guardian that also acts and is there with the kid. It was all very weird because they came and left together and they were both auditioning for something. So that's kind of strange.
Okay.
But I swear to God, the woman is sitting there and she's got, you know, the thing is you take in your 8x10, your headshot, and then your resume. And the woman is there with her manila folder and she's got not just one headshot. She's got like 50 headshots and they're all of different poses. You know, and it's like, here's the thing. You're standing next to a mattress for like 12 seconds in a TV commercial. Like, yeah. No one cares. You know, doesn't matter. And she's looking, and she's having this conversation with the woman next to her who is also auditioning. And by the way, there's nothing another actor loves more than to help you get the role that they're there to audition for. Because Hollywood is a loving place and the entertainment industry is filled with people who they cannot wait to help their fellow man. So there's nothing she wants more than to help you pick out, like, the correct headshot. So the woman is flipping through her manila folder of all of these headshots, and she says, I just don't know which one to use. I mean, it's like they're all of different looks, and they all have different sort of tones going on. And then she says this. She actually says out loud, without a trace of, like, hey, I'm dumb. She says, you know, and it's like, I look at some of these headshots, and I just don't, you know, it's so hard to pick the right one for something light like this, because, you know, because people call me really deep-looking. No one says that.
Oh.
No one has ever called you really deep-looking, honey. It's never happened.
God.
And by the way, if anybody did call you really deep-looking, the fact that you're toting around 50 different headshots of yourself gives the lie to that, like, immediately.
Mm.
So, and then, of course, speaking of your eye and daubing a little bit, so then there's a guy across me. He's compulsively putting in eye drops. And then there was like a friend of his who was there for like moral support or to drive or something. And again, it's like
probably because the guy couldn't see after all the eye drops.
Well, it's like I don't understand what the people just volunteering information that they weren't asked. I guess it's because if you're an actor, and again, I say this as somebody who has done some acting. I guess if you're an actor, and I'm in no position to criticize here, so I'm not criticizing, I'm just commenting. Because it's like nobody gets, as I said about the Kurt Cobain, nobody gets a radio show to become, like, anonymous, you know? I don't want anybody to know who I am. I guess I'll go on the radio. So it's not, I'm no different than anybody else. But it's this guy volunteering information, because maybe when you're an actor, if there's a moment where people in the room aren't paying attention to you, you get hives or something. So he's putting in all these eye drops, and then he turns to the friend and he goes, it's to make my eyes sparkle. It's like, why would you ever... First of all, that's not going to work. Secondly, unless you're putting witch hazel in your eyes, which I think actually blinds you, so that's not the right thing to do. Also, like, why would you... No one was asking. No one cared. No one said, hey, Bob, why are you putting eye drops in? You know what? If you're putting eye drops in, somebody assumes your eyes need excess moisture. They assume your eyes are a little dry, and you need to put a little liquid in them.
And it could backfire. He can end up like auditioning and then looking like he's sad
it's
to be buying
the best mattress I've ever seen in my life. I love him so much. Anyway, so that was so that's that. And then so then the woman comes out, and because I'm running a little late, she ends up she's like rounding me up with like you know some of the other folks, basically shoving me into another group of auditioners. So we go into audition, and it's me And it's like one of the, and a woman who's apparently mom and then a child. So there's like me. So I'm part of a nuclear family suddenly. And nobody told me that I was in for that. Nobody said that. They didn't say at any point that I was going to have to be in the room with a child. So we're there getting ready to audition. And it's like, I mean, let me hand this to you right here. Let's see. Okay, so this is the, this is for an actual company, so we probably shouldn't read the lines on the air. But yeah. You'll just see that there basically is just like two lines of dialogue there.
Yeah.
And it's like mom says something, and then like dad says something.
Yeah.
You know, and then the rest of it is all action. It's basically where you're taking a long time to get out of the house, and then dad says something like, oh, don't forget your car keys, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, or like, hey, let me turn off the lights. Dad just has one parting line as they're getting ready to leave. But the whole upshot of it is that it's like, boy, it sucks to leave the house because this bed is so comfortable. That's
right.
Basically that's the motivation in the spot.
Yeah.
Is that you basically, you know, your mom is dragging the whole family out of the house. Dad wants to stay behind because the bed is so damn soft and cushiony. That's the whole thing. But my point is that it's written down. Everything that happens is written down.
Mm-hmm.
Action, action, action. Mom says,
yeah,
you know,
you
we
this,
gotta go.
This,
action, yeah. Action, action. Dad says, but I don't wanna. I'd love to stay home. Action, action, action. Guy says, hey, buy some bedding. And then the commercial's over. So we go in there, and then the guy who is the director, the director. First of all, he's got an accent. I can never tell now if somebody's from Australia or England or like Wales or where Wales even is. Or whatever, and it's confusing because they've each got a Wales, apparently. So it's like, I have no idea. So the guy, you know what he sounds like? He sounds like that guy in the second season of Californication that's making Vagina Town. He's like, Runkle, great penis, that guy. And it's like, he's so excited about this commercial, he's just coming out of his skin. And so I go and he goes, great to have you here, guys. Okay, everybody say your names. We're going to give this a... We're going to give it a go. Wiggity-woo. Wada-bada. You know, and he's saying a bunch of weird, like, foreign stuff to me. You know, and he's all, jibbity-jibbity, who wants to act? You know, and he's just saying a bunch of, like, nonsensical, accented crap. But it's like, we've all got the script. What does he do then? He says the phrase that I never, ever, ever anticipated hearing. Rather than just, you know, following the script, he says, all right, guys, we're going to improvise.
Oh, dear Lord.
And it's like, I swear to God, if I didn't know sort of the people at the casting place by now, because, you know, because I've just done this, you know, I've been there a bunch of times, and it's like I did the Leverage thing, and, you know, and I'm not going to say, we're not friends, but we're acquaintances, you know, it's like they know me, I know them, like I would, they are this level of acquaintance. If you saw them at the supermarket, you'd stop and you'd talk for a second.
Yeah.
You're not going to go have a drink later, but you're not going to be like, looking the other way. You'd be like, oh, hey, so-and-so, how are you? And they go, how are you? And I say, fine, just buying some frozen food. And then he'd leave. So it's like, if not for that, I think I would have run. I think I would have been like, oh, hey, British guy, left something in the hallway. Hold on. And I would have just gotten in my car and left. I would have just gotten in the car and I would just driven home.
So you got to do a little improv in which you were the dad who was regretting leaving the house.
Yeah, doing a thing. And I'm improving with like a woman and like the kid. And kids are good improvers because that's basically all acting is just acting, you know, just doing what you do when you're a kid where you're like, I'll pretend to be so-and-so and then you be Storm Shadow or whatever. But then he's like shouting improv sort of directions at it, which seems to, by the way, it seems like if you're improving, it's just one of those things where it's like when somebody says just like improv, suddenly I wonder if I'm being punked, like if there's a camera somewhere, and like if you're going to come out from behind like a tree. They're like, oh, we had you there, Rick. But also like, you know, when somebody just says improv, first of all.
I know how you feel about improv.
But I mean, why? What is the, you've seen, there's two lines of dialogue.
Yeah, there's no good reason for... Yeah.
All right, everybody. Let's do some improving. And so we're just sort of going, okay. And none of us really know what we're doing. And it doesn't seem, you know. So, but we're game. We're putting our best foot forward. We're trying to do it as best we can. But when somebody says improv, it's like we were talking about with Don and Jim this morning in Outlook Portland about comedians. It's like when somebody says, "Hey, you're a comedian, right? Be funny. Say something funny right now." When you're supposed to improv, what am I supposed to do? Okay, I've got cancer. You know?
Here I am pretending to carry a briefcase, and I'm on my way to my important job at that office I work at,
also,
honey.
Also, I'm one of the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, I...
You know, and so anyway, so I just kind of went, uh-huh, okay, whoa. And I basically just sort of shifted around awkwardly in place. And then at one point, I think I actually called the kid Champ. All right, Champ. And then it's like, and then I just wish more than anything that I was an alcoholic.
Have a good day, sport.
Big guy.
Daddy, Chief. Daddy needs to drink now.
Seriously. Rick needs to drink. I really, really wish that I had a drinking habit. Just for moments like that.
I wish that at some point you would just realize that the job was kind of a lost cause. And so your improvisation in just was you being the bad dad. And you just started turning to the woman saying, "Speak when spoken to."
You were a mistake.
Mommy and I were happy before you came along.
You were supposed to keep us together. Anyway, so what do you mean it's a lost cause? Are you saying that I'm not going to...
No, I'm not saying that you thought
I'm
it
not
was...
I'm going to secure the role?
It would amuse me if at some point you just thought
just
to yourself...
Just went for it.
You know...
Just went all David Brent on it.
Yeah.
It was suddenly just getting all James Dean. You're better than Cheryl, by the way, who told me not to even bother showing up. She said, "Why are you even going to that?" And I just said, "Well, because they'd pay me if I got the job." And that's the thing, is like the amount of money that they pay you if you get a gig like that is just so, it's not like it's $1 billion. You're not going to pay,
you're not going to
live the rest of your life on that. But it's so wildly disproportionate to the amount of work that you would be doing. You know, it's like when I talked about the leverage thing, it's like, you know what, leverage, that's not going to pay my bills for a year. But I got to tell you, just the tiny, minuscule role that I had on Leverage, the amount of money they paid me to do just that tiny role on Leverage is like, I'm not. If there was a reason why the rest of the world hated us, it's that. I mean, so that's the reason why you go and do these things.
Listen, having looked at the script there, essentially, I mean, you know, everybody has one line.
Yeah.
So basically, you're hiring actors
to mill around
more based on what they look like.
Yeah.
I could see casting you in a lot of things, but
dad.
But you know, family man. Middle class suburban family
man.
I don't see it.
And by the way, today, I got a haircut last night. Today is Rick freshly with my haircut. I still don't look like a respectable father. Yesterday I was kind of shaggy and had this sort of growth, you know, because it's the end of the day. I just don't. And the thing is, they got my head shot. Again, I'm not complaining. I'll show up. I'll do it. Hey, if I get the gig, great. I'm not going to complain. You know what? Yeah. It's a tough racket, as they say. And whatever. You know, a little money to do some acting. Fine. Whatever. I'm just saying, when you look at me, do you think, like, you know, that's a guy who'd have kids and be good with them? No.
Yeah, I see him driving a station wagon and going to PTA meetings.
Yeah.
I had an interesting experience on Friday that I got to be on sort of the other side of the equation, the actor guy equation, because I'm not going to say his name because I don't want to humiliate him any further than I would otherwise, because I'm going to tell this story. But there's this fellow here locally, and I've seen him do a couple of things. And
he's an actor?
Yeah, he's an actor. You know, he's a guy who wants to be an actor. And he's done a couple of things. But I know, you know, we're friends on Twitter and stuff like that. And so I know that he works at a convenience store, you know, to pay his rent.
Okay. He's not acting.
Yeah, when he's not acting.
When he's not doing summer stock.
And I'm not saying that I have a tiny little crush on him or anything. I would not say that. But I have thought to myself time and again, you know, when I do get, like, my project in place, I would like to work with him because then, you know, we could hang out. And so I've met him a couple of times, and I saw him on Friday at the Midnight Movie at Dirty Dancing. And we have been in each other's presence several times, but we haven't really talked a lot. But we also, like, are both on Twitter, and he friended me back on Twitter. So, you know, I don't know how aware he is of me. So, but he knows Fat Boy. And so he's standing there talking to Fat Boy, and I go over and I said, "Oh, hi, we've met a couple of times, but I don't know if we've really introduced myself. I'm Don." He said, "Oh, hi, I'm insert name here." And we shook hands. And I said, I wanted to introduce myself because I'm working on a project. I'm trying to put together this sort of radio theater thing. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, if I approached you later, I didn't seem like some crazy stalker out of nowhere, that you knew who I was. But I'm doing this radio project. And he goes, "Yes." And I said, "Well, okay," immediately just like, "Yes."
Not yes as in continue.
No, yes as in, "Yes, I'll be part of your project in any way possible." He just said, "Yes." And I said, and then Bobby, Fat Boy, standing there, he goes, "Wow, you didn't even let her, like, finish what she was saying before you just followed her." I said, "Yes, because what I was going to say was, and I'm looking for guys to put duct tape on stuff.
Oh, that's so sad.
And then he looks at me, and then he goes, well, as long as it's not on my nipples, because, you know, I've done that before. And then I looked at him, and then Bobby looked at him, and then I saw him get that look in his eyes, and I know that look really well, because I've gotten that look in my eyes many times of like, oh, dear God, why did I just say that?
Did I really reveal that just now? Yes.
Or just like, I thought that was going to be funny.
Yeah.
And that was a mistake.
Or I thought it would be sort of rakishly amusing and not creepy.
And it was kind of nice to actually be on the other side of that, because usually in situations like that, I'm the one who says the inappropriate, dumb thing, and I'm standing there going, why did I do that?
Well, this is like layers of interesting. So this is, you've talked about this before. You're in the early stages. You're working on a live radio play, mm-hmm. radio project. So this is now he's an actor about around town.
Yeah,
I mean, like, yeah. Are we talking stage or are we talking electronic media?
He was one of the fellows in the Trek in the Park thing, for example.
Oh, okay, all right. So a guy that would be known to some degree.
Yeah.
Okay, and so it's that you just said, so I'm working on this thing, and it's like before you even get it, I'm working on it. Yes.
Yeah.
That right there. I mean, on the one hand, it's great. Does he really know? I mean, does he know you in the sense that, like, if he saw you on the street, would he go, Don Taylor?
Well, I guess he does. I mean, I've met him at Bobby's house. Uh-huh. Or actually, I've been at Bobby's house at the same time he's been there. But we haven't really ever had, like, a real conversation.
Would he have known your full name if you'd asked him?
Maybe? I don't know.
I hope so. And here's the thing. And this is really nothing to do with you as such. It's with him. Because the alternative is just to believe that acting is
anything.
Just so sad. That really, it's just, so I have this small part of, yes, I'll take it. Oh, please. anything, whatever, you know. And yeah. It's Mr. Whipple's understudy. It's just like they'll just say yes to any part, which probably is true. Because, again, that's how radio guys are. I've got a shift from, yes, you know, and it doesn't matter what it is. Standing at a mall in Oakland handing out radio station stickers from midnight to 4 on a Saturday. You know, yes, I'll do it. So it's probably a little bit of both. Yeah. Probably knew you a little bit, and then also through Bobby, and then also like, please God, let me act.
But now I also understand, though. I think I understand if you like extrapolate that out further.
You're Michael Bay.
I totally understand now, like, why producers would like use their power
casting couch
to, like,
baby
to like oh, bed, yeah. bed cute young things.
Because this guy, you just basically said hello, and he was talking about his nipples.
I know.
I mean, really. So, you know, look. Can I just tell you? There is a weird reality refracting prism, or a word like that, but there's a distortion thing that happens in certain situations, and I think you're talking about something like that right now, where it's like, and again, I don't, this is no knock on you, but it's like where you are, it's not that you are not a creative person, that you're not it's not that you're not a person to be reckoned with. But there's a difference between...
People perceive you as being more powerful and influential and important than you actually are.
Or than you perceive yourself.
Well, yeah.
Because, again, it's not like you're just some... You know, you're not just some chick at the bar playing pull tabs. You know? But it's, you know, it's not like you're Gail Ann Hurd. But at the same time, you're not just some bumpkin off the street. You know? So, but you know that. Like, you know that you are... Again, it's not like you're nobody. You know, you're not Secretary of State. You know that you're somewhere in the middle. But the thing is, like, on the other side of the prism, like, they don't know that. And so they see you, or, you know, whoever you are in this situation, as being so much more important sometimes than you feel is really warranted. I remember the first time, again, back to the radio comparison, I remember being, like in Coeur d'Alene. I mean, in Idaho, for God's sake. And we would do these, like, things where it's like, you know, we did these sort of, like, Not dances as such, but it was just like these big booze fest where like people would get together and it's like there'd be some dancing and some drinking and some vomiting and you know, and some prizes given away, and then a band would play later on. But it was like these big sort of like hootenanny things that the station would throw. Like half street dance, half like, you know, the cops are called eventually because it's a white pride riot. And it's like, of course, I'm like an idiot DJ at the station, so I'm the low guy in the totem pole, so I get sent off to just be the DJ for a couple hours at this station event before the band starts to play. So I'm there, and I'm basically a wedding DJ, except it's for a radio station. Oh, sorry. And I'm just standing behind, you know, not even turntables, standing behind, like, you know, a CD player and like a cassette deck, playing like Boston, and then some Journey, and then some Night Ranger, and then some George Thorogood. And occasionally giving away, like, I don't know, it's like I had ZZ Top tickets or something to give away that night. And it's hot, and it's like we're near Lake Coeur d'Alene. So there are these, and again, these are Idaho women, but still, We're near Lake Coeur d'Alene and it's hot, so there are women in swimsuits and bikinis. And I swear to God, I'm there, and you see how people's perceptions of the entertainment industry get warped if they're in that. I'm there and I'm behind the wheels of steel, you know, just amusing these rubes in Coeur d'Alene waiting to give away ZZ Top tickets. And this girl comes up. You know, people come up and they want to make a request. Like, can you play Eddie Money or whatever? It's always Eddie Money. So she comes up and this girl in a two-piece bikini, not you know, like a not stunning, but good-looking, I would say. Especially I was like 17. So, you know, she's an attractive woman. And again, in a bikini. And also, you know, I'm a guy. And she comes up and she doesn't just lean across the table to make her request. She actually comes around to the side of the table, and she says so, because the deal was if you play, if we're gonna play a ZZ Top song, and when we do that, we're gonna have like trivia or draw a ticket or something, and like you could win ZZ Top tickets. She comes around to the side of the table, and she says so, could you maybe let me know when you're gonna play that, batting her eyelashes, could you let me know when you're gonna play that ZZ Top song? And I said, well, it's a contest, so we can't really announce it ahead of time. You know, it wouldn't be fair to the other contestants, ma'am. And I swear to God, she reaches over, and this is like in a room full of people. She reaches over, and she grabs my hand, my right hand. I can remember this clear as day. Grabs my right hand, brings it over, and sets it on the inside of her right thigh, like not touching her business, but I mean like. That.
Yeah.
Like within like half an inch of like where her bikini bottoms or whatever started. And she like, and it's not like just holding my hand there, like she puts my hand down on her thigh and she said, well, I really, really, really would like some ZZ Top tickets. And just stared at me. And it was actually so, it's the sort of thing that I guess I was supposed to find hot, but it was just so bizarre and because I was thinking, I'm a DJ. Like, you have no idea what a clown I am, like, in the grand scheme of things. And it was like, I think that was the thing. It wasn't like I was creeped out. Is that I was just so, I got it, like, in my own head for a second, where I was so distracted by the fact that, like you are under the impression that I am somehow powerful, like, in some way, or that I am, like, influential, or that I have pull, or suction, as they say, on The Wire, that I got some sort of clout. And it was like, that's the thing, is like, she, you know... It's not like you couldn't go buy ZZ Top tickets somewhere or whatever. It was like that I was the DJ who held the ZZ Top tickets in his hand, her destiny in the palm of my hand. And so you understand how it warps people if you have, like, actual real power. And again, and this is, like, a much bigger thing where you're directing an actual, you know, putting together an actual radio play and you could give this guy a role. And immediately he's just, like, under your sway, you know?
I know.
He's under your spell. So, yeah, no, it's
I could just be heady with power.
But you understand why you get those guys who just become total a-holes.
Oh, it was a strange moment where I just suddenly, I had that moment where I completely understood it all of a sudden, where it was like, wow, if I was a man and I was like casting a movie and there was just like some hot young thing who was just like, I'll do anything to be in your movie. I mean, my God, you know, it's no wonder producers, like, you know, put their girlfriends in things.
Oh,
it's like, that's how they get them as girlfriends in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a weird thing. All right. I don't even know what we're supposed to talk about. It's like 2:16.
I did have this quote. You'd wanted me to remind you of this because I found it somewhat hilarious. James Rocky, he's a film critic of my acquaintance. He writes for MSN Movies and the Toronto Star. And he wrote on Twitter about an hour or so ago as we were getting ready for the show. He wrote, watching yet another indie film where I want to pour steak, scotch, and at least one set of balls into the male lead.
Now, was that about, do you know the film that he was talking about?
I have no idea what movie he was talking about.
Because and by the way, you will note, now was that, did you say that it was on Twitter or was it on?
Yeah, it was on Twitter.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Are there things that you will find that you will actually say, not even just privately, but you'd put them on like your webpage or you'd put them on like, you'd say them here or on Facebook, but you won't put them on Twitter? Because if you put them on Twitter, it somehow seems more like gossip.
I know that there are things that I will put on both Facebook and Twitter. And that there are different things that I'll put on one or the other. And part of that for me is because I have different audiences for each. It's like with Facebook, it's all people that are either listeners or personal friends and family. And with Twitter, I'll just you know, I'm
anybody.
Yeah, I've got all kinds of people following me on Twitter that I don't even know why they're following me or where they came from.
Because it's like if that guy was here being interviewed by us, and I said, "Well, what movie is that?" He'd probably tell us.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to me. It's conspicuous by its absence that he doesn't say what movie it is. Because like I would not like.
Well,
yesterday,
also he is a professional film critic, so if he's watching this for review, he probably doesn't want to like you know. Harsh on it in the middle of...
Well, I guess that show's going to say he's a critic, but the movie isn't over.
Yeah.
Because it's like I was, you know, like a lesser person than myself might have actually been twittering from the audition room yesterday going, guy across from me is putting in eye drops. Woman says she's really deep. And I would never do that because that seems like a thing you don't do. I don't have any problem talking about it here, but I wouldn't Twitter it for some reason. But it's interesting that you say yet another indie movie in which he wants to put a scotch, a pair of balls, and what was the third
steak,
thing?
Steak, scotch, and at least one set of balls into the male lead.
Because it's like, boy, how many indie films have you seen where that is like the overriding, like that's the tone, that's the description of it, is that like where it's just there's just some pussified male character. And the only reason I bring that up is because have you noticed this? Have you noticed that Netflix has developed these like insanely specific genres and suggestions?
Well, yeah, you have the thing where they say, "Do you like gritty drama? Gritty movies?" They give you a bunch of words, and then they have you say, "Do you like movies that are this quirky? Sure, foreign." Sure, I watch foreign movies. I watch almost everything, really. And so then they have these insane combinations of those things where they say, here are some quirky foreign movies with dwarves.
Or it's, you know, or the one.
Because you said you like dwarf, lesbian, quirky foreign documentaries. And I'm like, what?
A suggestion came up for Lara the other day in her Netflix queue. It was asking, does she want to watch, like, I forget if it was sitcoms or whatever. It might have been sitcoms because she watches Weeds. And it was something like, you know, more sitcoms with strong female leads or with strong women. I think that might have come out of the movies too. It was like not action films, but like films with strong female leads, which is which is fine, but it's just an interesting that they started to like slice it that finely. But this is a long way to go just this one observation. But you know what I noted this to her, and you are probably this way with Patrick, where it's like you're with somebody for long enough and you can kind of suss out what they like to watch.
Oh yeah,
you know, and what they like to listen to. You know, like my music taste for the most part is not that hard to discern. Like you can. It's not like I don't listen to other things, but if you were going to describe like the thing that I listen to, it is, you know, whatever. And it's like you'd be able to pick out the couple of elements that make like the quintessential song that would be in my record collection. I noted that really a Netflix category that ought to exist for my wife is an indie documentary, probably environmental in nature, which reveals that the Earth is doomed and we're all goners. Unless we listen to the sage wisdom of one man who is being overlooked by the mainstream media. Every goddamn documentary she watches is like some retelling of the Ralph Nader story. All of them. And I don't think she ever watched a Ralph Nader documentary, but they're all that. Every documentary she watches is about how corporations or pollutants from corporations are going to destroy the Earth. But there's one guy who's like a social sciences major, you know, like at Brandeis. He has the answer, and it's about like some crap we can do with like wheat or something, you know, or like a thing we can drive, you know, or some crap I can put on my roof that'll solve everything. And nobody listens to him because the mainstream media has vested interests in like something else. Every documentary is that.
Yeah, we had a conversation in the car yesterday where I told Patrick the screening was coming up of this movie, I Am Number 4.
Right.
And Patrick said, "Oh, I'd like to go see that. I thought that looked interesting." And I said, "Well, of course you did. It's science fiction." And he goes, "Well, you know, it doesn't." I said, "Patrick, you'll watch anything if it's science fiction." And then he starts telling me things that he's seen recently that he didn't like. And I said, no, I'm not saying that you'll necessarily like it.
You'll
but
see
if it's
it.
Science fiction, you'll watch it.
You'll watch it. Yeah. Yeah. He will at least see it.
And then he just like looked at me for a moment and then he went,
"My God.
Oh, God, you're right." I said, even if you know it's going to be crap going in, you'll say, "Well, I'm going to give it a try because it's science fiction."
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's like everybody has certain things that will keep them away from a movie. You know, and so we will all have things that will have, like, you will see anything with so-and-so. So, all right. Well, we should probably break, so we've been talking for like an hour. Let's see, we got the clue number two coming up in this week's Name That Snack Contest. Geek Watch, Penis Watch, Democracy in the March, try to get to that as well, and other things of that nature. So I should go into the break with this. I was going to read this email anyway, but this is a great segue. Speaking of music and things that I like, this comes to us from listener John. Let's see, John. John S. We'll call him.
Okay.
John. I'm never quite sure if people are sort of cool with me saying their full name on the air or not. I never know. Anyway, so John S. Subject line is the Avett Brothers. Rick, let me start by saying that I am from Philly. And by the way, people from Philly, half the time they call it Philly, half the time they call it effing Philly. Rick, or if you're Scott Farrell, you call it Philadelphia. Rick, let me start by saying I'm from the Philly area originally, so I have a genetic predisposition to loathe country music. Last week sometime you played Kick Drum Heart during one of your breaks and it caught my ear. I got the whole album and God help me, it's fan-effing-tastic. For most of my life, music has been just background noise, but your love for it is really infectious. Thanks for being unashamed in your taste. I sincerely appreciate it, John. And then this is great. He signs it. P.S. How about that Super Bowl, huh? I mean, I have no clue who was playing, but I thought this email could use some toughening up. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
I too am not a fan for the most part of most country music. I love the Avett Brothers.
Yeah, well, and
love them.
And I should say, by the way, first of all, you're welcome, but the thanks really didn't go to me. The thanks goes to two people. The thanks goes to Ryan White, who has been talking about that record, which is called I and Love and You. That is I and Love and You by the Avett Brothers. A-V-E-T-T. Ryan White just came in just praising them one day on the KUFO show, and he was like, he called it the album of the year, and he was up and down, just like raving about it. And I was like, yeah, I'll put it on the list. And then it's like, you know, there is no list, and I just forgot about it. And then my brother just started going on and on. He's like, my brother, I think, had actually mentioned it to me first, and I think I had ignored him or forgotten about it or just disregarded it. And then when Ryan White said it's the album of the year, in fact, that is what happened. When Ryan White said it was the album of the year, my brother texted me. He's like, I told you so, jackass. So they had been on me about it, and then I still didn't listen to it. And then, of course, when we were in Provo driving around, the Kanye West record or whatever had come to an end, and my wife put on that album. She put on I Am Loving You, and I said, my God, this is sublime. What is it? This is splendid. And she said, well, it's that I Am Loving You record that everybody and their goddamn brother's been trying to get you to listen to for the last year and a half. So I have to thank my brother and Ryan White and also Lara for making me listen to that. So we'll go into the break with that.
Okay.
We'll play that. So this is Kick Drum Heart, a fine composition, by
it
the way.
It is indeed.
So, and by the way, and I don't mean this in a snarky way, but I always feel a little bit sad. I know other people who say this. I always feel a bit sad for people who say things like, for most of my life, music has been just background noise.
Mm.
Because I just can't, and again, not like I said, you're defective as a person. People are into different things. I know people who aren't, I know people who don't watch television, so what are you going to do? But it's just like, I can't imagine living that way. But so it is great that he says, most of my life, music has been background noise. He said, but your love for it is very infectious. Thanks for being so ashamed. So I like to think that we have, as the man says, create a little shaft of daylight coming in there, just a little extra shading, a little additional color for the palette of your life, sir. So thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We'll be back after this. We got clue number two coming up for this week's Name That Snack contest. Also, Penis Watch, Geek Watch, and news with Don Taylor. Stay right there. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for. But I do know one and one is two. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. La ta 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 ta. History. Yeah, but I do know that
I love you.
And I know that if you love me too,
what a wonderful world this would be.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Still to come, we got your Geek Watch, Penis Watch. We got to do the house recap.
Yes.
Because that was the thing that we weren't doing because I was like way behind the rest of the world on it. And then we were going to start doing it. And then we just didn't.
And then last week there wasn't one.
So it's like this is our first chance in like weeks to actually get it done and get it done correctly. So we'll do that here just a bit. Also, clue number two in the E.H. Bending Name That Snack contest. But before we do any of that, it is Don Taylor at the news desk.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A Washington school district is taking a tough stand against sexting. Monday night, the Kelso School District in Kelso, Washington, voted unanimously to amend its existing cell phone policy to ban explicit messages. Sexting emerged as a growing trend of activity among teens 2 years ago, you know, when the media invented it and created a name for it. Illicit text messages, often including explicit images, are traded between cell phones. In many cases, the pictures are shared privately, but then spread to others in the community, causing embarrassment and shame.
And I guess it's wrong to say that the media made it up, but the media did sort of...
called it sexting.
Gave it a name, which is really just like, I mean... It sounds like a dumb question, but I mean, is it already... I wonder if it's against the rules, I want to say illegal, but I wonder if it's a violation of school policy to engage in explicit discussion in other... using other media.
Probably.
Like, what if you just whisper it to a guy? Like, what if some chick just says, hey, L86... or whatever that, or what is that, or is it LH6? What is the thing?
Yeah.
Isn't there like a let's get it on sort of a
LH8, LH8H? I don't know what it was.
00111000.
Yeah. So anyway, text messages and sexual pictures, text messages and emails are now banned on school property. The new code also allows school administrators to confiscate and search students' cell phones for the offending content.
Of course it is, because children don't actually have rights. Those are just.
The thing that I don't understand is I'm surprised that there are so many schools that have liberal policies about the use of cell phones on school property at all, because it seems like it'd be such a huge, huge distraction from the classroom experience that it's like, why wouldn't you just have a policy I know parents give their kids phones, and a lot of parents, particularly with younger kids, believe that there's like a safety element right. involved in it. But just to make the policy that cell phones are to be turned off and put away during classroom hours.
I think that is the deal with most schools now. I think that's the happy medium that they have arrived at. I think that you are allowed to have cell phones at school, but that most schools have simply said if it's seen or used during class. In other words, if I see it during class, I'm going to take it. And even if I don't see it, if I hear you using it or if I find out you're using it, it's going to be taken. That you can use them during breaks or in halls when you're not in class, basically. I think that's because there's no – the thing about the cell phones is – and it's – you know, and it's – I was talking about President Mubarak the other day. I said that I respect people who don't hesitate to sort of use their power. So I really can see both sides of this because I got to tell you that if I ran a school, the first thing I'd do would just be to clamp down with an iron fist. Everybody would be under the hobnailed boot of Rick Emerson's oppression if I ran a school. On the other hand, I also root for students to just F with things and to just to destroy order whenever possible. So I can really see both sides of the equation. But it doesn't matter because it's like the cell phones are so widespread that they just cannot be stopped. I mean, that really is, in a strange way, and I don't think I'm overstating this here, it really is civil disobedience in action. It is I mean this sincerely. The reason the cell phone thing is the reason why marijuana will eventually be legal. It is the reason why segregation was eventually overturned in the law. If not necessarily in point of fact everywhere, it is because if enough people just decide to disregard the way things have always been done, there is nothing that the power structure can do about it. And as I've noted before, you used to be not too long ago, within the last 10, 12 years, you go to a concert, and if you had a camera, they would take it away from you. If you had a recording device, they would take it away from you. They can't do it now because everybody has one. And the laws and the legal system and the social order in this country is predicated on the fact that at any one time, only like 15% of the people will ever be disobedient. If 85% of the people are suddenly disobedient, there is nothing they can do to stop it. And so the best they can possibly do is to keep them away during classroom hours. Because if you just tell parents, like, no, well, that's just not going to fly. It's just not going to fly because everybody has one. So if everybody in the country just decides that they're going to disregard a certain rule, there's just nothing to be done about it.
Well, I also have just so many questions about the legality and the ethics of stuff like this. I mean, the school district said that they don't intend to conduct random searches of students' phones, uh-huh. so they're going to respond to cases that are reported to or witnessed by school staff.
Because that won't be random.
Yeah, but the thing is, the first thing is they're saying that the new code allows school administrators to confiscate and search students' cell phones. So I have questions about the legality of, looking at what is on someone's cell phone against, without their permission.
Well, it does seem to be an unreasonable search and seizure.
And then they also say students caught sexting face parent and police notification.
And hailings from their peers.
Well, and I'm like, okay, if both parties are underage, where is the illegality of them sending naughty pictures to each other, and why are you bringing the police into it?
Well, because – well, here's the thing. If it's pictures, then it is actually production of child pornography.
Oh, okay.
If it's just texting, then it's not. If it's texting, then it's just a privileged communication, one would think, between two people, even if they're not consenting adults, they're consenting people. If you're taking photos of yourself – well, in fact, I think Kelly Clark had a story about that.
Yeah.
Where it's like the two people are dating, one of them turns 18 before the other, they have pictures, blah, 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 you're a child, you're a predator. So that's the thing. And I think that I can understand, understand the school's point of view in this sense, that if the school doesn't, then the school is tacitly endorsing the distribution of child pornography, however insane that legal definition is. And however inaccurate it may really be according to the spirit of the law.
And I certainly understand them not wanting this happening on school grounds during school
hours. Because they don't want to get sued by a parent who says, you let my kid create child porn.
But at the same time, though,
Well, it's like everything else. It's just going to – I mean, and this is – it's four syllables that make a lot of people angry for reasons that I've never been able to understand, and those are ACLU. It's just one of those things that's going to continue until the ACLU decides to sue somebody and sue some school district into oblivion or threaten them with a lawsuit. And by the way, I will say that lawsuits – And it doesn't look like there's been one filed here. But lawsuits on behalf of students against schools is one of the reasons that I continue to be a member of the ACLU. Because that is because there's nobody around to stick up, you know, for students.
Because, I mean, honestly, if a man recently was facing potential charges of hacking for reading his wife's email, even though the passwords were right there open, like next to the computer, that sort of thing. So how then do you get to read a student's email or look at pictures on their phone without their because the telephone is in effect, you know, a computerized device. It is, and if you're looking at, like, say, email,
and you have a reasonable expectation of privacy,
yeah.
And it seems like it would be even less legal for the school to do it, because the husband rooting around in his wife's email, you can make the case that they're married and she left the password out. But this is a governmental agency. It's not like the kid's boyfriend looking around inside the phone. It's a governmental agency demanding to see your property and searching around in it. And again, really without any just cause, unless you consider, like, some guy in your math class squealing on you to the man to be just cause, which it probably isn't.
And it's not the same thing as the argument people make about them searching lockers. Lockers are school property. Anything you put in a locker there is a reasonable expectation of privacy, but again, though, understanding it's not your property.
Well, landlord can go into your apartment. Yeah. Your school can go into your locker.
It's the same thing as if you're at work and you're keeping a bunch of porn in your bottom desk drawer. Right. Well, the desk belongs to your boss.
Right.
So, but the thing is, with your phone, that is your private property.
Yeah. Well, so, and again, it's one of those things that you have a reasonable expectation of privacy that you do not assume. I mean, things can be intercepted and hacked and cracked and whatever, but you don't figure that anybody's reading, the email on your phone. Even though you know it's possible, you figure that there are 9 billion phones in the world. The odds that someone is taking the trouble to intercept your message are very slim, so therefore you have a reasonable expectation that it's a private communication. And also, the other thing, by the way, is that the thing that continues to rankle me about this that nobody ever acknowledges is that people say, well, it's no different than being at work and your employer. It is different because you are required to be at school. The government forces you to be there. And if the government is going to force you to be somewhere, then by definition, the government forcing you to be somewhere, unless it's prison, cannot then result, in my opinion, in the forfeiture of your rights. I'm not a lawyer, though, so. And this, by the way, is because this is why I don't become a lawyer. Because it makes me angry.
If you remember being in school, you know, it's not like you have any real option for talking back. That's one of the, whenever I have that, you know, people bring up that whole fantasy, if I could go back to high school knowing what I know now.
F that.
Well, no, because it would be even worse, because you would want to stand up for yourself against authority figures.
That doesn't really work.
And it wouldn't work. No. You wouldn't be allowed to.
No, you would not.
So. Let's do our geek watch.
I got this email that says, I'm just going to read this email.
Okay.
This is why a guy who his username is Phineas 12 Gauge. Well done. He says, hey, Rick, man's hand nearly severed in salt spreader accident. And then he says, you know you want to click. I do. And
you do,
I will.
Of course you do.
There, I'm clicking right now. All right. I'm sorry. What are we doing here?
It's your geek watch.
Here's your geek watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson radio program.
This high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen.
There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Incidentally, I've gotten several more emails over the last 24 hours from people identifying themselves as iPhone hypocrites because their brand new iPhones have arrived in the mail or they've been picked up at the store from Verizon. So,
well, speaking of which, the Catholic Church in America has approved Confession, a Roman Catholic app.
Really?
For use among churchgoers and lapsed Catholics alike. Patrick Leenan of Little Eye Apps, the company that created Confession, claims it's already helped one person come back to the church after 20 years away. Protected by a password, the app invites users to examine their consciences and confess to their sins. The app costs $1.99 and just goes through the motions of confession. Churchgoers still have to see a priest for absolution.
When you said that the church endorsed it or the church condoned it?
The church has approved it. Yes, they've condoned it. You still have to see a priest for absolution, but they're okay with you using it for confession.
I mean, okay, but I know I'm asking for logic from the Catholic Church, which is just like that's a fool's errand. But, I mean, do they know that, like, you could just type that into anything?
Well, yes.
You got like a little notepad thing there on your phone. Or, you know, hey, write it out longhand.
That's probably why they said, sure, we're okay with it. Go ahead.
I guess because it's not anything you couldn't already do. You just type it into Microsoft Word. Seems like you're good to go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough. All right.
The Vatican has made some steps to embrace the 21st century. Last month, Pope Benedict, the whichever he is, 16th, gave his blessing to social networking, declaring, I would like them to invite Christians confidently and with an informed and responsible creativity to join the networks of network of relationships with the digital era has made possible.
Also, they were talking about making a patron saint of the internet. I don't know if they ever did that, though, because they were trying to figure out like which of the existing patron saints of the internet would be grandfathered underneath. So there was going to be some like, is it, you know, is it St. Augustine? Is it St. Genesi? Is it St. whoever? So they were trying to figure there was going to be a patron saint of digital technology and communications.
Well, the confession app was developed with the help of Reverend Thomas Wynandy of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops and Reverend Dan Scheidt, pastor of Queen of Peace Catholic Church in Mishawaka, Indiana.
So it's password protected, but like what is it just basically like a notepad and you write your stuff in there and it's like...
Basically, yeah, I think it's to basically just get you back in the habit of confessing your sins. Because again, you still have to go,
yeah.
You know...
And it's not like the sins vanish, like you open up later and there's a rabbit inside instead or something.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, if it was a really... You know, doing what it was supposed to do, you would type in your confession and you'd hit send and it would actually go to a priest somewhere and the priest would come back and go,
right.
Bing, you're absolved.
Or it would 10 Hail Marys.
Say 10 Hail Marys.
Yeah.
And then, like, if it's a really good app, then with each time you say a Hail Mary, you could just click on a picture and it would, like,
ooh, click, hey,
how many Hail
idea.
Marys have you said today?
No, somebody should invent that. That's a thing. You should do, like, a...
Rosary beads.
Oh, my God. I was just going to
say. Rosary bead app.
Like an iRosary. Like a rosary
yeah.
app. That is totally the thing. Did you see that Microsoft is coming out with it? Microsoft has developed that it's a screen. It is a screen that – let's see if I can convey this correctly. It is a screen that looks just like any other phone screen. It's like a regular iPhone screen or whatever. Just a glass screen. But that the surface of it – it can actually adjust itself at the microscopic level to create the feeling of texture or, you know, raised images, basically. And so what it essentially means is that, like, when you know, it could just be like a big glass display screen like an iPhone, but when you go to type, you could have what feels like a physical keyboard there because the microscopic surface of the glass adjusts and goes and shifts into the form of a keyboard.
Or you could be blind and you could use an iPhone and it could
be
Braille.
And it could be Braille. That's the other thing. And it's the surface of the screen itself. Like,
wow.
Who's the one that could turn into the shape of an ice bench or some crap? Jan? Zana?
Sure, I don't know. Yeah.
Zan?
Yeah.
Hansel. Whatever. But so the screen itself can morph at the molecular level and it can feel like keyboard keys. It can feel like Braille. It could feel like a picture. It could feel like a rosary bead, for example.
Nice.
So I'm just saying because that I had what I thought was the greatest idea. This is right up there with the idea that you'd have like a MacBook where the screen comes off and turns into an iPad, which. After the guy mentioned it, it's like you got to figure that's so obvious they must already have that in the pipeline. I was thinking about this, though. You know what they really need for the iPhone or something like this? Because people get all hung up on wanting the physical keyboard. You know, a lot of people are really resistant to typing on the screen. And I can understand why to some, you know, you want a sort of, you know, kind of a tactile sensation. So you'd have the virtual screen here. And then on the back, you would have the physical screen. But it would be keys that were just ever so slightly raised, where they were more or less flush to the surface, almost like like a speak and spell.
Okay.
You know, where it's not buttons as such, it's maybe sensors that are underneath a piece of plastic sheeting on the back. So then you could actually, you know, but then there's the whole question of like, how are you going to do that without having a screen on the back as well? But the Microsoft thing solves that altogether.
Nice.
It really is a freaky time we're living in.
Well, and here, as part of our Geek Watch, I have a second story. A game developed by a Boston-based tech company that allows users to drive a truck full of immigrants through the desert and try not to have them tossed out of the truck is drawing fire from some immigrant advocates. Smuggle Truck, Operation
Smuggle
Immigration.
Smuggle Truck.
A proposed iPhone and iPad app by Alchemy Labs, targeted for release in March, lets players navigate through what appears to be the U.S.-Mexican border as the truck drives over cliffs, mountains, and dead animals immigrants fall off the truck's bed. Scores are calculated by the number of immigrants you help cross the U.S. border.
Wow.
Developer Alex Schwartz said the idea for the satirical game came out of frustration friends faced while trying to immigrate to the U.S. We felt like this issue was kind of a bit of a taboo for games and popular media, he said.
You think?
So we wanted to build something about this struggle that would put it, we would put into our work and our passion, which is making games. But Eva Malona, executive director of the Massachusetts Immigrants and Refugee Advocacy Coalition, so you can tell that she's
a fun-loving woman.
Bundle of laughs.
Yeah.
Said the game is in poor taste and trivializes the seriousness of immigrants willing to risk their lives under a broken immigration system. Last year, 170 human beings died crossing the border, she said.
Save it.
It's disgraceful that anyone would try to make money out of this tragedy by making light of it in a game.
Game.
So, yeah, they...
It just makes me want to download it or play it. Or is it a game? Is it like for the the phone, or is it like
They're developed for the iPad and iPhone.
See, that's one of those things, like, you wonder how Apple could possibly... It's like that... there was, like, that Shake the Baby app that came out for the iPhone last year.
Yes.
It's like the baby cries, and you shake it until its eyes turn into X's.
Yeah.
And then that lasted, like, a day and a half, and Steve Jobs went, no, I guess not.
Maybe not.
All right, there you go. Is that the Geek? Oh, by the way, just note the Rosaria app already exists.
Oh.
You can get it, I swear to God, at a site called Aptism. That is APPTISM. Aptism.com/apps/iRosary. So there you go. Just one more idea that's just been taken right out of our heads.
Yeah. Now, does the church approve of the iRosary? Do they believe that? I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. As long as you're saying your Hail Marys, it doesn't matter how you count them down.
Yeah, the rosary is just there to keep track. It's just like an abacus.
Yeah,
it's like a prayer abacus. That's all. Unless you're Madonna wearing them around your neck, in which case you're a hussy and a harlot. Let's see. That's your Geek Watch for Tuesday.
By Grapthar's hammer, by the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Well, I'll just take this small moment here, just a brief pause in our program to talk about Squire's Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is squireselectric.com. Still to come, by the way, we'll do clue number two for our Name That Snack contest for this week. Also, Penis Watch, and we'll talk about last night's episode of House. But just having talked about the iRosary and the aptism and all that, the stuff that you know and then the stuff that you don't know. For example, I have no idea how to create an app. Couldn't do it. You couldn't do it. My life depended on it. I have zero idea. And the thing is, I could probably, like, learn or teach myself to do it, just like I could probably learn or teach myself to, you know, to play Hi-Li, like if I really felt that I needed to, or to cobble shoes or something if my life was on the line. But you know what? They got stores for that. You go to the store, and guess what? They'll just hand you some shoes, and they're already cobbled. I mean, really. You're skipping the cobbling stage, like, altogether. And it's the convenience there can't be overstated. So...
cobbler.
It just seems like you could probably train... Well, first of all, training yourself to fix the electrical system in your home is probably different than training yourself to cobble shoes. You're probably not going to blow your hands off cobbling shoes. I mean, unless you're cobbling with dynamite. So, and how often do you do that? So you contact Squires Electric at 503-252-1609 or go to squireselectric.com. You can find out more about them. They've been in Portland for going on 13 years. Joe Squires, of course, is from here. Or from Shugel, which is close enough for jazz. And he was in the Navy, where he learned to, yes, stop a steam leak aboard a nuclear submarine using a belt and a mattress. Or a more pliable shipmate. So now Squires Electric is here, and good enough to wire the ENN studios. Good enough for your home or your business, my friend. In fact, we've heard from business. It's not a lie. It's not a thing where, like... This is not like that thing where they say, we've heard from dozens of people whose lives have been improved by this crap we're selling you. This is not that. This is the thing where, like, we have actually read emails from listeners, testimonials, they say. There's a guy building a gym on Belmont. He gets a pre-existing structure, but the wiring is insufficient for his needs. Squires comes on out, bam, done, finished. Passes the inspection, he's ready to go. So we have listeners aplenty who've talked to Squires Electric for their home or for their business, because they can do anything from a single socket, a single outlet, all the way to wire in the entire joint, top to bottom, soup to nuts, A to Z. And contact them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. Squires Electric, a proud sponsor of this, the Rick Emerson radio program. We now return you to Don Taylor at the news desk.
Mardi Gras chiefs spend all year preparing costumes for the annual New Orleans party, but while photos of their flashy attire are hot sellers in the Big Easy, chiefs have never seen a cent of the profits. Until, that is, this year.
Are these chiefs like Oahu chiefs?
Well, kind of. They're they're the heads of the crews that put on the different Mardi Gras.
Is this chief like just like boss guy? It's not like an Indian thing, is it?
It kind of is. There are Mardi Gras Indians, and they are there's this whole culture where they have
Mardi Gras from is Mardi Gras from France?
Yes, but also here in Louisiana, though, people were Creoles. I'm not sure why they ended up being Indians. I'll tell you that. But
let's all be Indians.
There's the black guys who do Mardi Gras are Indians.
They love to be referred to as that, by the way. The black guys who do Mardi Gras.
Well, there's white Mardi Gras and there's black Mardi Gras.
Really?
The crews.
Oh, I know which one I'm going to.
Traditionally, the major Mardi Gras events were all white. And so there is actually an entire there's a whole separate
When you're
second.
Saying the crews, that's C-R-E-W-S.
Right.
Okay, the teams who work on the so there's a
Right.
What you mean,
but and it used to just be upper class white guys.
So when you say that there's different crews working on different that there's black Mardi Gras and white Mardi Gras, was that like depending on what part of town you go to or something?
Kind of. They have separate parades.
Interesting.
They have separate crews.
I didn't know that.
There's a really interesting documentary that I can't remember the name of now where a woman looked into did a documentary on the history of the Black Mardi Gras crews, and then actually was there when they had the very first Mardi Gras coronation that black kings of the Mardi Gras and the white king of the Mardi Gras were in the same place at the same time for the very first time, and this was like 2 years ago.
First of all, I realize now that I know nothing about Mardi Gras. What coronation? I have no idea what we're even talking about now. Who's coronated?
You have all these different crews, and each of the different crews has like a king of the crew. The one crew Rex is the premier Mardi Gras crew, but there is someone who is chosen from among all the crews to be the king of the Mardi Gras. And he rides on the big main float, and he wears a big crown and a big coat.
Is it like being the Rose Queen or something?
Yeah, and there's a coronation ceremony, you know. And so, but the thing is, when blacks were excluded from Mardi Gras some 100 years ago.
So like, we'll do our own?
Yeah, they started doing their own. And they have always been separate. Always, always, always been separate. The dances, the parties, the parades.
Probably more lively as well, I would imagine.
Actually. A lot less stuffy.
Yeah.
I'll try and find out what this the name of this.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would like to see that.
It was really, really interesting. But anyway, with the help, they've never actually they create their costumes for Mardi Gras, but have never seen any money from the profits from Mardi Gras. A Tulane law professor has helped the Creole Wild West Mardi Gras Indians copyright their outfits, which means that whenever anybody takes a photo of them, they won't be excluded from future payments and that money is made from those photos.
It will take their soul away, however.
Well, yes. this is art, what we do, said Creole Chief Howard Miller. These suits cost thousands of dollars, and all we want is a little bit of what other people make from them. The Washington Post estimates that there are approximately 35 Mardi Gras tribes operating in New Orleans, including the Wild Chupatulas, Black Seminoles, who are one of the black crews, and the 7th Ward Hardhead Hunters, with many members coming from working class neighborhoods. Costume preparation is an expensive and time consuming ordeal.
So, but the copyright, who would have to pay for what? I'm so completely. I realize now how little. Like most people, I think most guys, all I know about Mardi Gras is like there's chicks who take their tops off. That's it. There's donuts of some kind, but they're called beignets.
The crews spend a lot of money creating elaborate costumes, building, putting together. In a lot of cases, bands. They have musical groups. They put together their floats for the parades and stuff, and it costs a whole lot of money. And most of them do it as like sort of a year-round just labor of love. It's a huge, huge deal. And these guys wear, particularly the Indians, who are for the most part black Mardi Gras guys, not all, but the Indians, wear these enormous, elaborate costumes that cost thousands of dollars with these huge
headdresses. And it's a huge tourist draw, and there's lots of dollars brought into the city for
exactly.
it. Okay, all right.
And, yeah.
That's what I get for not watching Tremé. I'd know more of these things. Because Laura has she's gone to New Orleans, I think, a couple times. And of course, you know, she, do you want to go? Me? No. And so she like went off, you know, and so and then she would come back and she would say, "And here's me in a swamp or whatever." And you know, but I just know so little about that, except for like, you know, I basically just know like the Girls Gone Wild depiction of Mardi Gras, which I know just makes me like a tool. But yeah, you know, it seems like a thing that I don't ever want to actually be at in reality, and so therefore I think I've never bothered to learn about it like in theory, because it just looks like a living hell to be at.
The only way to really, I think, do Mardi Gras, because I've done it, I've been there twice, and
it seems like you would just despise that.
Well, and that's the thing, is that if you're just like milling about on the street with people, it can be horrible because there are so many people and so many tourists, and it's insane. But if you can get to know somebody who has like an apartment or a hotel room in the French Quarter that overlooks one of the major parades, that you can like sit on a nice balcony and not be down with the rabble, it's awesome. It can be really, really wonderful.
It was not unlike, okay, so it was a little bit, to some degree, it was like how I enjoyed Times Square on New Year's Eve. You know why? Because I was in a hotel that overlooked, you know, like where they dropped the ball from. And so I could just sit up there in the balcony and go, look at the people in the streets below that I don't have to mingle with.
Right.
All right. Okay. Excellent. That explains it, actually, because Laura and her friend were it's that thing where, like, Laura has a friend who, like, knows a guy whose roommate is going to be gone at some point or whatever. You know, some guy who knows a guy who knows somebody who's going to be out of town for, like, Mardi Gras at some point in the future. And they're all, like, angling to get the apartment or to be there during Mardi Gras. That explains why they were so bent on striking some deal where they could stay at the apartment. That makes a lot of sense now. Because that probably is the only reasonable way to enjoy that. Because otherwise, it's like you're just – I mean, it's just going to be – it's just going to be torturous getting from one place to another.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's madness. It really is.
All right. And so forth. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It doesn't matter to me. We can just roll on through.
Let's do the penis watch.
All right. Here's your penis watch for, let's see.
Take.
By the way, did you see Anna Griffin's her Twitter update last night?
No.
I'm not sure. I think it may have just – it was like an at Rick Emerson thing. Just a brief side note here, because you and I have talked about how it seems that every time she's here, there's a penis watch. Let's see. There's somebody. Do you ever just say stuff and then you forget you've said it until you see it retweeted by somebody? Or not even retweeted.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's a thing I've just said here, and then somebody transcribes it. And
for
like me saying, you'd think there would be more nun-based pornography, which a guy has just passed around the entire internet so that my mom can see it. Thanks. Anna Griffin yesterday says, I have met 4 people in 1 month who know me strictly from the Rick Emerson Show. They will be shocked at how rarely I mention Buffy and penises in the Oregonian. So there you go. Here's your penis watch for Tuesday in the Rick Emerson Radio
Take
program.
A look at my enormous penis, and my troubles start a-melting away.
Bow, bow,
I take
bow.
A look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Bow, bow, bow.
Here's Don Taylor with your penis watch.
Okay.
Oh, God.
A German man in his mid-30s died after injecting a massive amount of opiates into his penis. He was in, and I'm never sure how you pronounce this. Is it it's Phuket? Phuket in Thailand? Phuket?
I believe it is. Well, I don't know.
It's not pronounced the way you might think.
No, I believe it is. I think it's Phu, like Phuket.
Okay.
Phuket? Could be wrong about that. I don't know. Well,
I think it's Phuket.
Let's pick something.
Yes. Anyway, after he admitted his partner to a Phuket hospital for the exact same thing. The late partner was discovered at his hotel room after having failed to answer the phone call. He was discovered in his hotel room after he failed to answer phone calls from the hospital the day after he admitted
so this is,
his
and,
partner.
And it is Phuket, by the way. Well done. So this is, okay, but this is not like a year ago. This is like yesterday.
Yeah, this just happened.
Okay.
Guy took his partner to the hospital because the guy had overdosed on opiates injected into his penis. And then he himself died in their hotel room after not answering phone calls from the hospital about the other guy with the opiates.
So they both decided to do this at the same time. They didn't like one. It wasn't like, well, one of us should do it and the other one should, you know, just stay by the phone to see what happens. Okay.
Police say they found hypodermic needles at the scene and injection marks on his penis. They also found containers and some empty vials of methadone. So the surviving spouse has been moved to the Fachira Phuket Hospital and remains in serious condition.
So the first guy admitted not dead. Second guy, dead.
Yeah.
Dropped him off and then rather
then
than
saying
like—
apparently went back to the hotel and started injecting stuff in his penis because it went so well for the other guy.
Well, that's my thing is either he went back to the hotel and just started injecting away or he had already done it but figured that he had done a smaller amount or maybe that the other guy was sick because of something else. Go figure. I mean, why would you—
But would you actually be able to transport somebody to the hospital if you were— As high
I guess not,
as they were?
I was going to say, why would you go back and do it yourself? But I guess if you're a junkie, you don't really need a reason.
No.
That is the answer and the question all at once there.
And also, why into your penis?
I don't know. You know, can I just tell you what somebody sent me the other day that remains unwatched by me and has a good chance of remaining so in the future? And it was one of those things like, you know, you see the YouTube video and sometimes it's like you see like the screen capture or whatever like the still is and you don't have a sense of like what the full thing is going to be like when you watch it. Like, you know, hey, watch this YouTube video and it's just like a picture of a tire and you go, well, it could be an auto race. It could be a junkyard. It could be a store. It could be Les Schwab. I don't know. I guess I'll have to watch it. But then sometimes you watch a YouTube video and it's like a guy getting a spear in his eye and you go, oh, yeah. Oh, I think I know what that's about. So this guy's...
I think I get that.
So this guy sends me this YouTube video and it's like, hey, you should watch this, LOL, which is always your first, yeah. Like, you know. I look at it and it's a guy standing shirt on, pants down, more or less fully aroused. And then it's like he has taken a mason jar and put it over the end of his unit. So he's like standing there, nude and tumescent. And then it's like his business is in like what looks to be a jar. Mm-hmm. And I thought... Well, that's odd. And so then he sent it to me like embedded in an email. So I did the thing of double clicking, which then takes you to YouTube so you can see it in context. In context, it's just man's penis stung by wasps. And it's like, well, first of all, why?
What, on purpose?
Well, like first, second, and ninth. Why? And yeah, I mean, because it's not like he tripped and fell into the jar full of wasps. He has wasps, puts them in a jar, and then puts the jar over his penis. And then also, by the way, hey, can you film this so I can send it to Rick Emerson or so it can be going to the Intertron? I don't know. So why would a guy do that? Don't even get me started on this dancing video that I have at home where a guy has 10-penny nails.
Oh.
You don't even want to know. And then it's like in the end, he's, yeah, it's like a rainbird effect. You don't even, yeah, it's awful. So why would a guy do that, you know?
You know, obviously I don't have a penis. But I would treat
you're
it.
You're better off.
I would treat it a lot better than it seems like an awful lot of people do.
See, you say that, but that's never the case. You know, that's not how it works, apparently. You know, Mick Jagger had that thing where he admitted to taking part in some voodoo ceremony or something where they jammed cactus needles into his junk. It was like they put one of those like Chinese finger traps, like a bamboo weave thing around his unit. And then they just went like, it was like Mandrake the Magician was there with swords in the basket going, and now look, whoosh, and then just shoved cactus needles. You're like, why? Why would you do that?
From what Keith Richards says, maybe he assumed that there wouldn't be a lot of needles since...
still not a lot of Mick.
Not a lot of Mick. Really.
I mean, Mick himself a bit of a needle. There is no solution, you know, like that, that is not worse than whatever the problem is. Whatever you're solving, that's worse. You know, this solution is no. I don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, can we be done with that?
Uh-huh.
Injecting opiates into his penis. Does it say what kind of opiates they were? There was methadone at the place.
Methadone.
Okay, so that's all right. I thought that, and that's what you just took. You take that when you're getting a smack or something, right?
Yeah, but it's still an opiate. It's just, I guess, it's not as, I don't know. I think they can control the quality of it more readily, and I guess it's not as addictive as heroin. So I don't know.
There's like that thing about you hear Steven Tyler talking about getting a big bag of cocaine and just lowering his business into it before he would, you know, which seems like a bad idea and a waste of cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to be talking up your area with cocaine, what is the point of that? I don't understand unless it's supposed to be some topical anesthetic to prolong the male experience.
Yeah, well, yeah.
You know?
But...
Which is like, it seems like you could probably just go to the drugstore and get something for that.
Well, also, you're not really enjoying it fully if it's numb, are you?
I don't know. I haven't really been powdering my area with cocaine. Mm. But it just, you know, but it seems like if your whole deal is like, well, you're going to you're going to retard the progress of the sex act to prolong it. It's don't they just sell like what is like not Bactine? What is it like if you get like a burn lidocaine?
Yeah.
You know, or like whatever, like they gave me to put in Max's ears.
And there's little aids you can get. Like back when I used to do those home party things as a salesperson for that, we had the Kama Sutra products.
I don't think you revealed that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't.
What a horrifying thing for you to have done, really?
Yeah.
I'm sorry for you.
I went to one of those parties with a friend, and the woman who was doing the presentation
loaded you down with stuff.
No, she was so awful that the friend I went to the party with and I both looked at each other and go, we would be so much better at this than her.
Did you buy out of pity or did you buy because you're thinking like she does it and so we're better than she is. We could do it and make money.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
And so then I did it for a while and it's another one of those multi-level marketing things.
Yeah, and also you're showing like fake penises to other women and talking about them a lot. And that's just weird. It's not hot. It's just strange.
No, it was very strange. But the Kama Sutra made a numbing gel kind of a product that was mint and it was edible and it was mint flavored and it would numb you. And
why do you want your mouth to be numb? Oh, I see.
Yeah, in case your mouth is where the...
It's the other thing. But then as a byproduct of that, in case you... Okay. All right.
And I also had a part of my spiel when I would be passing it around to show it to the ladies. I'd say, and as a bonus, if you want, you take a little dab of that and you can dab it in the back of your throat and it retards your gag reflex. And there would always be this moment where the housewives would look at me quizzically like, well, why would you want to? And then they go, oh, and then they'd all start laughing.
And then they titter.
Then they titter.
Yeah, tittering is exactly what that is, too. Yeah, we're so naughty.
It was a sad period in my life.
Stuck in a horrible Fanny Flagg novel.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there's your kid. Don't jam opiates into your penis, please. If you take one thing away from today's show.
Take a look at my enormous penis.
God damn.
And my troubles start a melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
This email just says, has Don been jousting? Oh, because of your eye.
Oh, I've got the the jousting.
That's
in my eye.
Yeah, okay. That does make more sense because I was trying to figure out what the hell he was talking about there. I thought he was referring to the penis watch somehow, and I was trying to figure out what crudity I was sort of missing out on.
Don been in a sword fight?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
Oh, that's you know what it means.
No, but what would it mean for me to be in a sword fight? Because I don't have a penis.
It's where Ram is there, and then the other guy who's not Ram in Heather's. What is the other guy's name? Mac? Chet?
Yeah.
Phil?
Chet, I think it is.
Chet and Ram?
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, I know, but I'm just like, I don't know how I would be in a sword fight because I don't own an actual penis.
You wouldn't be in it so much as you'd be between it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Cheryl. Apologies. Bygones, as they used to say in L.A. McBeal. All right, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our Michael Jackson watch. Let's
Excellent.
Just do watch after watch after watch.
Well, why not? Excellent. Well, we're getting caught up in the sense that we teased these at the beginning, and so often we promote things and we don't get to them. Because we get to, okay, let's do this, then we got to talk about House.
Right.
But here's what I'm going to do. We'll do this, then the Clue, because lately I've been kind of pushing the Clue
and
to
then
the
we'll
end.
Talk.
Then we'll do House, and then we'll roll that to the end.
Okay, gotcha. The doctor facing criminal charges in the death of Michael Jackson is back treating patients in Houston, Texas.
That's comforting.
Charles Ingram, an employee at the Acres Homes Medical Clinic, says the clinic, as well as its patients, are pleased to welcome back Dr. Conrad Murray.
We have no clinic per se, and he came in the community willing and ready to work.
Oh, I would imagine he's probably trying to burnish his reputation in every way imaginable.
So that explains a lot about why they're pleased to welcome him back. We have no other doctors here.
Otherwise, you're just sitting at home just leeching yourself.
Murray faced a room full of appreciative patients at Acres Homes Medical Clinic, where he has practiced since 2006.
I'm trying to get you all out of here as soon as possible. It may take a little while.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what problems you have, but we will address them all.
Well, we have more time than we got money.
You do?
So we're ready.
So really, it's like it's really just one of those places. Go somewhere where they like any doctor is an improvement over what they've got. And so then when the man comes to drag you away to court or possibly to prison later, that everybody in the community can throw, you know, can say, no, do not take our doctor. And then it'll be like a scene from a Joe Avalon film.
Well, I was sure for a moment that he was going to actually respond and say, you know, how long it takes for them to get out of there. Well, that depends on how much money you have to buy drugs from me.
I mean, I just can't.
You could be here for a very long time as long as your bank account doesn't run out.
Where did Michael Jackson find this guy? I mean, is the question, because was he at this clinic before and then he left to go work for Michael Jackson? And where is it? It's like in Pig's Knuckle, Arkansas, or something. Where was it at?
Houston, Texas.
Well, why wouldn't they have a doctor in Houston, Texas? Is this in some especially poor part of the city? I don't know anything about Houston, really. I've never been there, so I don't know. I don't know how Houston's all laid out. It's a metropolis of some kind, so maybe he is just in some. Maybe he is in some section or region of that city where they're understaffed and where the socioeconomic situation is such that they just don't have any health care. You know, which it's not like. Not like it's a rare occurrence in America. So, you know, I guess there's that.
Well, according to TMZ's bio of him, because apparently TMZ has pages where they have bios of people, he grew up in Trinidad. He graduated from a medical college in Nashville, Tennessee, worked at a couple of universities. And then, yeah, he don't know.
Just big gaps in his employment.
Yeah. Don't know. Don't know where he...
And he was gone for long periods of time. He seems to have gone off the grid a bit.
Well, he did file for bankruptcy in 1992 and is reported to have had judgments filed against him or his company totaling over $435,000. But I don't know.
Do you get the feeling that maybe Neverland Ranch was a place where just like what you got in exchange for going there and doing whatever your job was, that like no one would be able to find you? That you were just like, basically it was like having diplomatic immunity. You know, you were like, you were in the Kennedy compound or inside the UN building or something. You're in the consulate where they just can't get to you. Because if you're at Neverland Ranch, you got to figure that Michael Jackson could just keep the world at bay from you like forever.
Yeah. And, you know, he's not going to ask any questions.
No, he doesn't care. Like as long.
Can I have some drugs, Dr. Murray? Yes. I love you.
Okay,
that's pretty much it.
Kind of sound the creepy, molesty guy from Family Guy. Is there?
I don't do invitations.
But it's like that's the thing. It's like you'll go and you'll provide whatever service Michael Jackson needs, and in exchange, he will just make sure that you are hidden away from the outside world. Perhaps if you are if you're being trailed by creditors or plaintiffs of some kind. Not that that would ever happen to Conrad Murray, who I'm sure isn't. He's an upstanding and reputable physician.
I can't find any actual information as to how he became Jackson's doctor. Maybe that will be covered in the extensive televised trial that we will be watching
because
soon.
It's just like at some point Michael Jackson had to have met him or come into contact with him or somebody in his entourage did. And you just wonder, like, what was the first, oh, my God. Just speaking of how does that happen, remember yesterday we had like a 10-minute conversation where I was talking about rodeo clowns. I'm like, what is the point in your life where you become a rodeo clown?
Yeah.
Okay, so this other comedian, Don Frost, who was on the Outlook Portland taping this morning with Jim Willig, he very nearly, I swear to Christ, very nearly became a rodeo clown. No fooling. And I thought he was pulling my leg. I said, you heard yesterday's show. And he's like, no. And I said, okay, start again. And he described how he very nearly became a rodeo clown. And he said he came within just like a few days of actually like, and I stopped him there. I'm like, we're going to have you on the show someday and you're going to explain the journey from like birth to near rodeo clown. So we will have that answered sooner rather than later. All right, there's your Jackson watch for, I'm sorry, that's wrong. Tuesday, right here. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll talk about last night's house in just one moment. Before we do anything else, it's time for clue number two for this week's Name That Snack contest. By the way, Cheryl would like me to note that I have not been mentioning some of the fine print for this. I think we already mentioned this, something about the, you know, if you are an employee or heir or a sign or whatever, you know, like you basically, you know. If you're part of the skull and bones like inner circle of the Emerson News Network, then the
piss off.
That's right. Exactly that. That's it, really. Also, blah, 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 win once per 30 days, blah, 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 blah.
Give somebody else a chance, for God's sake.
Because otherwise there's just going to be some candy Jedi out there that's just going to win, like, everything every week. So, in any event, so, and so forth. This is the Name That Snack Contest for the week of February 7th. 2011. Today is Tuesday, February 8th. We will have clue number two in just one moment. If you are not happy with your current vendor, if you never really see them, if maybe you own a business, or maybe you just maybe you work there, and it's like you get that thing where also the machine is really empty and it's just like some Schweppes crap that you don't want, and it's just you're going like, well, why is this even here? What, I don't even
that Hawaiian punch in a can. It's not even fizzy.
Right. And you're just like going, well, why? Why is this even in the machine? First of all, why is there nothing else in here? And then why is this here? Who asked for this Hawaiian punch to be put in here? It's like being a rodeo clown. Who said, like, put Hawaiian punch in tray number five?
And those weird little potato crisp snacks with Andy Cap on them.
Oh, the hot fries.
Yeah.
No, those aren't very good.
No.
Also, he's a wife beater.
He is.
So, you know.
A drunkard and a wife beater.
So that's what you want. That's what you want on your snack food. I'm happy to say that EH Vending does not, they don't supply machines with Andy Cap hot fries.
That we're aware of.
I was just going to say that with confidence and pass it off as a fact. I don't believe they do. Because really, who asks for that? Again, who says, like, no, you know, that's exactly what I've been hankering for all day. Not so much a hunk of cheese as it is something with a cartoon character from 1852.
Now, the Hagar the Horrible beef jerky, that's tasty.
Josh and James, who are the owner and the sales manager of EH Vending, respectively, can be reached at 360-816-1853 or 503-897-8204. That is 360-816-1853 or 503-897-8204. The target audience is the everyday worker, somebody stuck in the office, the shop, if they're stuck for a long time between meals. If you'd like to, you know, snack every now and again during the day, maybe doing the thing eating several small, delicious, tasty meals during the day. Or if you're just like me and you just can't stop cramming things into your gullet, they can help you out with that. So if you are paying too much for your current vending service, contact EH Vending at ehvending.com. That is ehvending.com. And again, they are extended members of the Rick Emerson family. Josh, they've been listening for 13 years. 13 years! Nearly a decade and a half. I was so young when this all began. I still have the spark of life in my eyes. Tell me you heard it here, if you will, please. That is ehvending.com. Today's clue is chocolate. There you go. That is today's clue.
I don't even know what our snack is for this week.
Really?
I don't.
All right. So that is today's clue. Clue number two, chocolate. Once Friday comes around, when you hear clue number five, which is given on Friday, if you were the first person to correctly identify the snack via snack at rickemerson.com, you win a heaping helping of consumable goodness from EH Vending. It's EH Vending. All right, before we do anything else, we got to get out here in just a short while to make way for funemploymentradio.com. But we got to talk about last night's house, because I said we were going to do that. And I stayed up late to watch, and then I also, like, transferred it onto my iPhone just so I would be able to watch it, like, in the Slack moments right before the show if I didn't get a chance otherwise. I did finish it last night. So, Don Taylor, your thoughts on last night's house, season 7, episode 11?
There was a point at which the episode, of course, is Cuddy's mom is sick. And she doesn't want House to be her doctor. But then Cuddy says that, but then this other doctor may not know what he's doing. So Cuddy says, you know, I want you to help my mom no matter what. But then he knows that Cuddy can't know.
Who is the other doctor, by the Kaufman or whatever his name
is?
Like, we've never seen. House has no adversary. He has no opposite number in the hospital except for Cuddy, who's not really a doctor.
I got so confused about two-thirds of the way through the show where I was just watching it and I looked over at Patrick and said, I have no idea why everyone is sneaking around.
Right.
And
then there's the medical chick, the prodigy,
other.
The 17-year-old girl or whatever she is, or, you know, the young, I forget her name, but the young girl.
Amber Tamblyn.
Is that Amber Tamblyn?
Yeah, it's
okay.
Amber Tamblyn.
All right. What would I know? What else has she been in?
She was on Joan of Arcadia, and she's Russ Tamblyn's daughter.
Russ Tamblyn's daughter,
and,
I knew.
And David Cross's girlfriend.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well done, David Cross. Okay, Joan of Arcadia, that's exactly where I know her from. But yeah, and I couldn't figure out what part she was playing in the whole thing.
Yeah, she's, well,
I mean, she's a stool pigeon, but I couldn't figure out, like, who was being lied to about what.
I think they've decided that Cuddy can't be relied upon to tell House what to do or to not do anymore.
Who has decided that?
The writers.
Oh, okay. Not like the crew.
No. The writers have decided that. And I think that's what this whole episode was about.
She's the new Cuddy?
About Cuddy can't, like, stand up to House the way she used to because now she's his girlfriend. Because, you know, here's the thing. When the ladies start having the sex,
right,
they can't think straight or be your boss anymore.
The power of the penis clouds their judgment, yeah. Don. They have to do is even think about the penis.
So Amber Tamblyn is going to have to be the person who says, no, House, you can't do that. That would be wrong.
It is interesting, actually, to know that the whole thing about Cuddy, I mean, it's not like I'm even, like I'm not a chick, but even I can see that they do that weird thing of her, of setting her up in the beginning of the series as being the strong woman, except where lady things are concerned, like babies and kittens and penises, or the affection for penises anyway, because she just can't juggle home and career. She can't juggle life and work, Dawn. It's just not possible.
Well, it took her about 4 seasons to actually find clothes that were large enough for her.
Yes.
So
yes, it did.
Considering, you know, she spent the first 4 seasons of the show wearing these suit jackets that were 3 sizes too small and would gap apart in the front because they had to be... Everything she wears has to be skin tight for some reason.
Well, especially because I don't like... And House is always talking about, like, you know, her being a bosomy woman. But really, not so much.
She was talking about her butt. Like, that she had a big butt. She doesn't have a big butt.
No. And it's like she looks... And I used to find Lisa Edelstein very, very attractive. And it's not because she's gotten older. It's because she's gotten bony. If you go back, I actually was just watching a rerun of The West Wing the other day where she is there. And now, admittedly, that's like 7, 8 years ago, but so what? It's just that she actually had, like, when I want to say softness, I just mean that, like, she looked like she wouldn't hurt to the touch.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't hit her and just go, hey, you're all hollow inside.
Well, and the character is really harsh and kind of cold as well.
There's nothing appealing about her as a character.
I don't get that relationship, and I don't see any kind of chemistry really between them at all.
No, not as actors either. Here's my thing, is I realized something last night with House. That I have gotten to the point with House, and maybe this is about me, but maybe it's about television. Because you and I were talking about the Californication season 3 finale, because I convinced you to watch it even though season 3 sucked. And I said that the reason I was not going on is because season 3 wrapped things up really well. Roger Ebert was the one who actually, I think he said at one point, that the complete destruction of a man is as valid an ending for the character as the complete redemption of a man. Might not be as fun or cheery. It's a depressing thing, but it's still valid. It's a fair way for things to end up. It's realistic and reasonable. And in some ways, it's really the only reasonable way to end it. Because if you look at, again, that episode of Californication, which I think was probably meant to be the end of the series, if you look at The Shield, if you look at any number of other series made in the last 10 years, you see how chickens really do come home to roost. And I think that's a thing that has started, Breaking Bad has done that a lot. I think that that's a thing that we're seeing more now in television than we used to, is consequences. And so, like with Dexter, I'm watching House, and I realize I have reached the point where I long for just some kind of consequence. I long for, like, a medical examiner from, you know, another state to come in and go, like, no.
The two most interesting periods in House to date have been the one where he was going head-to-head with David Morse.
Yeah, that was great.
And when he ended up, for a brief time, you know, having in an insane asylum.
Right, right.
Those were the two best periods. And that was because he was actually having to struggle with the consequences of his own behavior. You know, just him being a dick is only entertaining for so long, and we're, what, in like season 7 of the show or something now?
And I mean, I know that, you know, that you got to, like, stretch that out as long as possible, but again, to use The Shield as an example, because, you know, that thing with David Morse, that was sort of like when Mackie was up against Forrest Whitaker, which was great. But, you know, The Shield was 7 seasons long, and admittedly, they padded a little bit toward the end, but it also had a satisfying conclusion where things ended in a melodramatic way, but in a believable way, where you're like, this guy cannot skate on the thin ice forever.
Also, I have never understood how it is that they want me to feel about Taub and why I should care about him.
I don't know.
He's kind of an awful little man, and they keep trying to make him redeemable. And every time they start to give him some redeeming qualities, he turns around and, like, cheats on his wife again or does something dickish. Also, how badly are they paying these guys? I mean, He's a doctor working at one of the most important medical facilities in the United States.
Right.
For a doctor who is like
world-renowned.
A world-renowned specialist.
And he's like,
he's not making enough money.
He's got a freelance with a guy he hates on the side. He's got actually moonlight for a guy who belted him in the face at one point, apparently.
I don't buy, unless he has like some kind of super problem with like hookers or gambling that we haven't seen to date on the show. There's absolutely no reason why this guy should need the money that badly.
It is one of those. House is a show that I'm not fooling anybody. I will continue to watch it, but I also do sort of ask myself like, why. And yeah. I started that actually a few seasons back. I took a long break because, admittedly, I was watching it like a couple episodes a night. But even so, it's like I really, really do wonder why. I think I'm just sort of hanging in because I'm a completist at this point.
I watch it more out of habit at this point because I really love Hugh Laurie. And because there will be...
The occasional great episode.
Yeah, there will be the occasional great episode. You know, there'll be these great moments, usually between House and Wilson, that I will enjoy and that
right.
will kind of make it
Where was
worthwhile.
Wilson, by the way? He was just gone last night.
He had other things to do.
Off spelunking or something.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we don't have time to do it now, but the next time we talk about this, I had a great idea, actually, for shows like House. So I will make a little note to myself, House. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include, I believe, Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. And then Thursday, speaking of fantastic television, Thursday we'll talk to Joelle Carter from the FX series Justified, which returns tomorrow night. That is Wednesday. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News episode, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program, and so forth. Do we have a guest today? I can't remember. No, we did not.
Okay.
I'll make sure I don't leave anybody out. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, Reverend Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thank y'all for listening. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all, and that is never, ever taken for granted. So we thank you, and please do spread the word. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See y'all tomorrow. Bye now.